You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hello, into the live stream we go. It is September 18th, 2015. The live stream, I'm waiting for Dal and Mojo to join me on this fine Friday work week. It's been an exciting week here at fakeologist.com. Audio chat is going strong. Hello, Dal. How are you?
Bonsoir. Good. All right. Thanks, mate. Yeah. I don't know why I said that. Bonsoir. But yeah, why not? Fine.
Since you're here so much, I'm going to upgrade your status to operator. That way you can talk power.
Okay.
By your name.
So does that mean I could come in on my own and make a recording now?
But no, you always could. But now you can upgrade.
A newbie.
Wave your magic wand and give talking power.
I see. That was it. Yes. That sometimes happens. So, yes, appreciated.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and doing a great job on fakeologist.com. Always here every day. I can contributing in a way.
Hey, I just kind of, it's nice. It's nice. It's just something I just have sitting there, you know, each day. It's part of my daily sort of little, it's on my brow, the tabs there on my browser sort of thing, you know.
That's very nice. That's great. Excellent. Excellente. Superior. Superior. Hey, did you like that Johnny Cash or that Kris Kristofferson song? I thought that was great. I played that about 200 times last night.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I did. I did listen to that and I got into it. I listened to a few versions. I listened to a live version. Yeah, it's a good song, isn't it? Yeah.
I wonder if he wrote it. As he did, I think.
Something about Johnny Cash there. So I'll have to check if he did write it or not. I know he wrote Me and Bobby McGee, which is quite a famous song that Janis Joplin made quite famous.
Go ahead, grant Mojo talking power. Now's your chance. Make her
How do
work.
I do it? Just click on her microphone.
Right click on her, and then you bring up a huge menu.
And then which one do I press?
The grant talk power. Did it.
Should do it, yeah.
Did it.
Hello.
Hello, Mojo.
Hey, up.
How are you?
I'm fine. You?
Same Mojo the other day from Aberdeen, Scotland.
Mm.
She's right up on the top of Scotland. She said it's very high up, but it's very windy. She's a child of 69, so it's our sort of vintage. You shouldn't really ask a lady her age, but, you know, yeah, we know now.
Wow, yeah. That's our age, all right.
I was listening. Nice.
Do they have the wind? Do they have the windmills in Aberdeen?
No.
If there's so much wind there?
Aye, we have the you know, the turbine things. Aye.
Yeah. You do. Okay.
I've got one really near my house, and I can hear it going woo, woo, woo.
Does it work? Does it really generate a lot of power? I mean, for the area, is it real?
Yeah, but it can't store power on the grid.
No, I understand that. But is it always going?
Oh, no.
Always,
but this year's
wind?
Been really windy. I mean, this has been the windiest year I can ever remember, ever.
So maybe it is generating a decent amount of power now.
Aye, but the thing is, it can't store it.
I understand. Yeah, it is, but it doesn't work on demand, obviously. You can't say, hey, wind,
no.
Blow, make this thing work.
Well, pretty much you can. You're pretty sure here it is.
Power goes somewhere once generated. We have it here, and we have one at the lake right near downtown Toronto. And I don't know if it's broken, but I it's never spinning, mainly because there's no wind down there. But why they put it there is just a reminder of the failure of wind power. I don't know.
I think wave power is probably better.
Power?
Wave power, the power of the sea.
Wave power. Are they even trying to harness it? I don't even know how you do that.
They're doing it off the west coast in Scotland.
Okay.
They've got these, like, sorry, I don't know when to speak and when not to speak. Anyway.
I'm just keeping my mouth shut.
I'll get used to it.
Speak. Just speak. Don't worry. Go.
Okay. So, yeah, they put these, like, floating things on the waves and they go up and down and they create electric.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, because, like, well, the waves is pretty permanent as opposed to the wind.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. If it works, that's great. Yeah.
I just wonder about it. Yeah, I mean, I wonder how, I was talking to someone about it the other day. Are there suppressed technologies that really, isn't power available freely now with the technology we have in certain ways? Couldn't we, I mean, perhaps, yeah. Or if it isn't even sort of, isn't the peak oil and all this nonsense, is perhaps even oil a never-ending, isn't
resource,
never-ending
supply?
Yeah.
Well, they just
don't know.
I'm clueless.
They just keep finding oil everywhere.
Alex Jones hyped that up.
No.
Alex Jones always hyped up that there was loads of oil everywhere, you know.
No, there is.
So I don't know.
They just found more oil in Australia than they have in Saudi.
Is that right?
How abundant is oil? Is it like, it's the second most abundant liquid on the planet. Is it as abundant as water nearly, you know?
It's like Earth's blood, I think.
Yeah.
I suppose we can't really know. Just leave it at that. We really do not know. Just because they said, he said that they found oil in Australia bigger than Saudi, well.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
Says,
it's not fake. Well,
I don't know. How can we tell? Mm-hmm. We have to just take everything.
The geological every media surveys.
Mojo came up with a good point, actually, we could hit on the, because she's not sure. She said to me, are you one of these everything is fake people? So I thought we might sort of have a conversation on it. 9/11 was an interesting one. She thinks that perhaps firefighters perhaps died. You might want to make that point, Mojo.
Why do you think that? Why would they have to die?
Because that's their job to do that. The towers definitely came down, okay? And that was their job to do that. And I've seen far too many videos and stuff about the real life accounts of firefighters and the fire captain who lost all his guys, you know? I mean, is that fake?
Talking about at 9/11 or in Scotland in real life?
No, in
9/11. You know of? Oh, that, well, why would it be real? If we, watching my videos that I post on fakeologist.com about controlled demolition.
Aye, but look, the towers definitely came down, right?
Oh, but can you answer that question? Have you watched the absolute beautiful demolitions of their buildings that I post
of course.
Every week?
Yeah.
And I believe those are real.
Uh-huh.
And do you see how beautifully they collapse?
Yeah.
How you see dust cloud? Do you see the absolute absence of just about any rubble after?
Yeah.
Okay. It appears on the research that Demolition Corporation, CDI, that they are able to destroy very big buildings beautifully, quickly,
with
almost no rubble. So why are we concerned? Why do we think it's not possible that they would have done that with the Twin Towers? What is different about them?
Okay, so have you seen all the footage of the firefighters and covered in dust and stuff?
All the footage, and I believe the thesis of Simon Shack and September Clues that all the footage was fabricated as in a movie, because the movie was fully charged of emotional stories to hook people into the belief of the story, to hook people into the myth, and all of it was fabricated to control the exact of the situation, and that is my belief.
Okay.
Firefighters are in a regiment anyway, in a way. They're perhaps controllable, and their stories would have been key to selling the whole thing. They had to be highly developed and sophisticated. They were perhaps the ones, you know.
How many firefighters were actually involved?
350.
No, but did we hear accounts from 350 firefighters?
No, they're all dead.
Okay, but did we... There were there was more than 350 that were alleged to have gone into the situation. Yeah. Would have been thousands, I think. But we only saw a representative few, which were most likely ex-firefighters, rather, or actors, or any combination above.
I struggle with that.
For the representative.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair enough, Mojo, because you seem totally, you're genuine. I can tell, you know. So, really? You know, it's a relevant point. If you struggle with that, then that's fair enough. You know, it is challenging. You know, I don't
because
know
the tower definitely exactly. came down that day. They did really? Come down.
Down that yeah, day well, in yeah, a controlled oh, yeah. demolition.
So why wouldn't the firefighters be doing their job?
Well, they do evacuated. They'll be doing their job because they listen to orders, and the ones that were told to go would go and leave the area.
They didn't know what to do. I saw their faces. They were just totally shocked.
But what you saw was...
We're contending that what you saw was just part of the simulation, the movie part of it.
Okay,
but
yeah.
But you are watching. You are evaluating a movie, my dear. It may or may not have been... That would not have been done on that day either. It would have been prefabricated like any other movie, months or years in advance.
Okay, yeah, I know that, but there must have been some sort of reality involved, as in the towers coming down. That was real. Movie. That was real, right? It wasn't
well,
fake.
Well, the reality is our guess, and that's all we can do is guess, that the area was evacuated just like in all the CDI videos that I post. The area is evacuated of people. Yes, it's possible. Manhattan, Lower Manhattan is a peninsula. It's a...
I know
that one side is a road and the rest is water. So they could easily isolate the area, and that's the way they choose. They have to an area they can isolate. The area was isolated. People were cleared out. Buildings were brought down by CDI in a controlled demolition. And there would have been probably some kind of dramatic, kind of on-the-scene drama.
Do you not think it's almost harder to do that than...
Why?
I mean...
What's harder about what?
That's one of the answers people say when these big, massive magic tricks are carried out, you know. It's something so complicated that took so much planning and time to do. It's sometimes on some fine details. People think it's beyond capability, but really, as Ab sometimes says, Hollywood movies are made every single day, and they're incredibly complicated.
I know.
And they take a long time. They take a long time. Hollywood movies take incredible planning.
It looked real to me.
Good.
Not like the Boston bombings or whatever.
Well, the 9/11 had to be one of the biggest and bestest because it was to kick off the new millennium. It was happy birthday, second millennium. It was a big show.
Yeah, I know.
London, just like the London Olympics, you know, they're not putting on a children's party there. They're spending a lot of time and effort and money. It has to be a really big shoe. 9/11 was to be the show for the next 25 to 50 years. Don't forget, they planned that. They want you talking about it for 50 years. You're not going to talk about a balloon bursting. So you need a lot of... A lot of components to talk about. A lot. Just like I couldn't believe it. In my bathroom, and my family insists on getting People magazine, which I hate. On the front cover of People magazine this week is the Kennedy woman, the Kennedy sister that got the lobotomy. All the years later, we're still talking about this annoying family. How is that's crazy? Why do my children have to know about this person? It's ridiculous. This is what's going on.
I actually like JFK, actually. I liked his speech, even if it was contrived or whatever. I liked it.
Of course you're supposed to. It's designed for you in mind.
Do you actually think he's still alive? I mean, seriously? Well, he'd be about 100.
No, I don't know. I don't know if he's alive any more than your grandfather or my grandfather would be alive by this point. Anyone that's born where he was born. He was born in what, the 1910s or 20s?
No, he'd be about 95 by now. What, living on a paradise island somewhere with Elvis?
You have to be on an island with Elvis.
Yeah.
He could be in the Kennedy compound. I'm sure they have lots of property. he's in Lesbos helping the... The Lesbos helping the Turkish migrants or the Syrian migrants off the boat,
Lesbos.
Doing some groundwork.
Yeah, he's probably the key player in that. Yeah, yeah. Of course. I mean, he's. It makes sense, doesn't it, Mojo? To an extent, you could think about it theoretically or hypothetically. But you could. There must be people in who would be retired. I think probably.
Aye.
Yeah, death is powerful. Death is so powerful. Mm. This is what we
find. Oh, I know.
And
my best
death.
Friend died.
Yeah, mine too.
Well,
actually.
Guess what?
I can say
I have a friend that just died of cancer on Wednesday.
Oh,
real person.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And, real person died. I just found out 2 hours ago.
Oh.
So real stuff happens. So, you know, if you come to the people say about Fakeology, you know, it's just a name, Fakeologist. It's Tim's name, Ab's name for this site. It's just a word, but they say, you know, the fakeologists who think everything is fake. Well, don't think they do, actually. I think they're realists. That's what they really are about. They were about real stuff. And, real stuff does happen.
I can't believe the level of fakery either. I really can't. It really astounds me every single day. It astounds me. It blows my mind. So much engineering of stories, whether they're partially fake, completely fake, a little bit fake. I don't even know half the time.
At that site who somebody put me on to about, you know, that air crash recently who landed on the, you know, the road.
TransAsia one?
No, the air crash, the air show crash.
Oh, yeah, the one in England.
Aye.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so this guy's trying to say it's all fake, right? I mean, he's going through all the pictures saying this is fake, that's fake, this is fake, that... I just, like, totally turned off. I'm like, why on earth would you fake that? I mean, accidents do happen.
Yeah, but we see with repeated air crashes, and they do happen a lot at air shows. They have been. There's been quite a spate of them recently.
Aye.
And it could be then a health and safety drill on a big scale to somehow change the laws and change the way people think about danger and safety at airports. You know, this is
or
a big scale.
Maybe. There's always many, many angles possible, but maybe as an agenda to get rid of air shows in populated areas.
I would agree with that. But you don't have to fake it.
Why
not?
Well,
I think this is what we're seeing happens. We're seeing this does definitely happen, Mojo, you know? I mean, I didn't go into that crash, but I nearly started a thread on it, you know?
Why not? Why, if there's a real agenda behind trying to persuade people that these things are so dangerous and accidents are happening every single time, we better stop the shows in general, then this would be a way of doing it for sure.
It was pretty amazing that the pilot fucking survived, like. Seriously?
That's better. Now you're getting it, Mojo. Come on, get that
getting
Mojo
it.
Working. You know. He survived. The pilot survived. This jet aircraft went down in flames in the road. And also they brought in who were the victims? Two footballers again. It's football, I think. One gold medal again or something. You always link it to this sport of the masses, the population, the
popular
people.
Well, he must
people.
Have ejected or something.
Story.
Well, they link it to people who have a following. If it's a footballer and footballers have a following, they put them in the story. You're going to look at the story. If they're all nobodies that you really have no real link to or interest in, you are not going to pay attention. They have to
I'm a moron too. I see football and I go, ooh, I like football. I always grew up liking football and it catches my eye.
Oh.
You know, it's
well, listen, if there's
details.
Really?
Sure.
You like football?
I don't care. I'm.
I mean, you know.
I hate football.
Be honest. Same with celebutards. I call them celebutards because most of them are famous for a particular thing, but everything else they're retarded about. You know what? I like Amy Winehouse. Okay, I'm trying to find her movie online so I can watch it. But I haven't been able to find it yet.
She's one of the chosen ones.
I watched a BBC documentary that somebody cobbled together. And when I listen to her speak, I think, okay, she's a great singer, but I really don't want to hear any of her opinions because she's not intelligent enough to want to hear from. But the point is, I did pursue it and try and follow what she has to say because I love her singing.
Mm.
In reality, of course, she's a great singer, but she's no philosopher, and she's really doesn't have any relevant views for just about anything that I could care
she
less
likes
about.
She likes heroin.
Well, that's what we're told. I don't know. I can't prove it. But the point is, though, we follow people we're interested in for whatever talent they might follow. They're a singer. But the thing is, they are followed by a lot of people. So we can give them a message to pass on to the population because we know they have followers, just like Twitter. Apparently, people that have millions of followers can be paid large sums of money to put out a tweet because they know that people are actually possibly their tweets or saying what they have to say, even if they don't actually say it, even if they have a PR company that does the saying, they have a following, and that's what it's all about. Just like the Pope. The Pope is coming. The entire world will listen to what he has to say. Who else on this planet or whatever we're living on can have an audience that wide? Ooh. Almost nobody.
The very thought of the Pope coming is like making me cringe.
Well, these presented figures, it's like royalty, isn't it? Royalty works the same way. They're good ways of good organs for mass communication, for mass control.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But, the Pope speaking to Congress, it might be one of the most viewed things in a long time on whatever media of your choice, live TV or...
Hey,
it's funny, isn't it? This bloke turns up in this weird white outfit with this little skull cap. I mean, it's absurd. It's all fun. It's all good fun, I suppose.
Vicar of Christ.
Animals are funny, aren't they?
The Pope said that aliens would be resolved of their sins.
Great. The Pope, maybe Buzz Aldrin. Maybe there's hope for Buzz Aldrin then, because I think he's an alien.
Did you see his last... thing when he was like, he's done a new book, Welcome to Mars.
That was fantastic.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we all saw that.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I posted that. Did you notice, one of the first things I noticed, and Babette noticed it too, were his red and white striped socks. He's batshit crazy, that guy, at this point.
Well, poor old
Buzz. He looks it.
But he was he said in his book, didn't he, when he first sort of went out to start speaking about having landed on the moon, he had a terrible problem with the question, what was it like standing on the moon? Poor Buzz, he had got terrible nervous problems. He keeps
quite honest
about them.
Oh, you think they might have programmed that in?
I just think that was a tough question, you know. Right. He thought he could handle it this time. I mean, he's a tough guy, you know. He's obviously a fighter pilot. I mean, this guy's no mug at all.
But
the psychological pressure of that.
More they let him talk, the more dangerous something is going to come out. But, hey, let him talk. Let him keep talking. Know that they don't have to worry about keeping their story straight because no one's really holding them to account when they contradict themselves. I love how he said he threw out the life support system's backpacks way out of the on the way off the moon. That was priceless. Just open the door, toss them out. Hey, you've got too much weight here.
opened the back door and threw it out, and it's got these starry eyes, wasn't it? His eyes were shining. Oh my God. Yeah, but I mean, 85 years old, and he's going out and he's been given a little pill or something to sort of steady his nerves.
On speed, for sure.
For me, the Pluto thing really, I didn't notice it until, you know, they named the heart after whoever, and then somebody put two eyes and a nose on it, and there you have, you know, Pluto from... you have Pluto from Disney.
What did they name first? Did they name the Disney dog or the planet first? I think the planet's named after Disney dog, I think.
Okay.
Went in that order.
Really? Well, the last
so.
Time,
you got...
it wasn't even a planet. It was just a ball of ice or something.
They lost its set. They're making a big story about it in the past. They're creating drama around a alleged flying rock, and they downgraded it, and then they upgraded it back. It's just a line of storytelling. Let's be frank on what we're dealing with here.
What's going on, Pluto? Yeah, Mickey flipping mouse.
I had a guy. I had the Sky TV guy here. And I was going to say, Do you know how? Do you know where the satellite's pointing to and stuff? And then I thought, well, I'm going to ask him. Do you know how they send data back from 3 billion miles away by any chance? You got any idea?
In a geostationary satellite. So I don't think it's 3 billion miles away. But they're a long way up, but 3 billion. I mean, we do talk about these sort of numbers with space, don't we? It's absolutely absurd. You know,
they're so big that they're unaccountable. You can't account for numbers are... they're all mainly occult, too. Mainly occult. Zach can tell you.
Well, I had to laugh as well. Sorry, RB. I had to laugh because they showed this close-up of Pluto, like it's a little square bit, and it looked like sort of a close-up of a teenager's skin.
That's probably what it is. Yeah. Someone had a good idea. There were some slides, and they were actually sort of microscopic pictures. Mm-hmm. I thought that was quite a good idea. Oh, yeah. And I was going to say, I'm going to sort of, it's not name dropping so much as like putting a few connections here, which are surprising to me in retrospect. But I had a friend who was the daughter. She was the daughter of one of two guys who escaped from Auschwitz. this guy's name was Rudy Verber, but she's died now. She died 2 years ago. Her name was Zusa. But heard she was a daughter of him. Okay, and part of what he did was help write the Auschwitz protocols. So really important, major sort of document from the Holocaust document. But then she got a job working with Patrick Moore because someone mentioned him, Patrick Moore. And doing artwork for talking about space. Patrick Moore was the kind of go-to science guy for the UK.
Oh, he definitely had like autism or something.
So she got a job with him, and she worked with him for a while. I don't know much details, and it's retrospectively though. This is all this sort of stuff comes to me. But there you go. So that's interesting, I thought, in a way. Mm. And that was one of the jobs she'd done. She'd worked with Patrick Moore in space. So her father had been a part of this huge deception of our times. And then she was put into this kind of field of deception as well, it seems, possibly, you know, working in this space art. But she was an artist, you know, another example of an artist who worked mm-hmm. in, and she had a direct connection to another great scam band. And yeah, I mean, yeah. Wow, she's a lovely woman, amazing woman, amazing woman. I loved her, you know, she's a great friend, but I never really put this all together, you know, until just it came back to me, little snippets of memories. I thought that meant something to me, though.
So that person's still around, or they died, or?
She died 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, so you can't question her now?
No, I can't. I wish I could. Oh.
I, something that Geronism, can't see it, Geronism. He said,
right.
All these people who have died and not known what they're actually living on.
Yeah, I know. He said that his grandparent. Well, you know what? I think we might die without knowing either. We don't really have a good way of knowing, but we can just speculate till the sun comes home.
What's your thoughts on death then, Ob?
Oh, don't get me going on that. I don't want to think about it.
I think it's nothing. I think there's nothing.
What, you say you think when you die, it's nothing?
Yeah.
I think your lights are out. Yeah, I think lights out. Goodbye. See you later.
Yeah.
But you better enjoy yourself
nothing
now.
Nothing doesn't exist, though. Does nothing exist?
Yeah, death of
is
course.
You could take that two ways. You could say death is nothing, i.e. it doesn't exist. Or you can say it means nothing. Therefore, you're kind of consciously unconscious. Or you just are unconscious.
Oh, forever. So what? Are you spiritual, are you, honey?
Well...
I don't know. It's not so much spiritual. It can be it's a very philosophical question in a lot of ways.
I mean, I don't want to get personal, but my mother's got Alzheimer's and there's nothing there.
That's sad. It's a sad disease.
So when she dies, her soul sort of almost miraculously comes to life again, does it?
Well, I think you could have a lucid moment from someone who was, as you say, apparently not there now in your mother, but they could have a lucid moment when they, you don't know, they remember every single little detail of something from their childhood or something, and very much the essence of them is back there, you know, in their own head.
It's just
her body. It's like you know, any part of her body is and a brain and a mechanism is aging, and there's a therefore it can't work properly at that point.
I struggle with the soul because I've seen it die when somebody's still living.
Yeah, I get that kind of thing of like the life going out of somebody while they're still living. I understand that.
There's nobody there anymore.
But that's what I'm speaking to it in a way.
Just a vessel.
The vessel that that life energy is in, that positive force or whatever it is.
Well,
you're identifying that there's something there because you're identifying that it's gone, I think.
Well, I don't want to see her in heaven.
Well, I don't know if heaven exists, does it? I mean, that sounds like a very basic mechanism of control that we've been given with this heaven and hell thing. You know, that's an old-fashioned sort of, if we're going to think in these sort of terms.
I was quite I liked reincarnation for a while. I thought, you know, I'd quite like to be a butterfly or a tree or a cart or a something else. If that's possible. Is that going backwards?
I don't know, but whenever I try hard to kill a mosquito because I know it's going to bite me, I always think of an old boss. Like, I wonder if this is you. Give you a good smackdown and finally get my revenge.
It's interesting. I mean, I never did think these things. I used to be in a position where I just people talked about spiritual things, and I didn't get it. You know, and they said, "Oh, that when such and such's father died, they had a sign that morning. They thought they saw them at the top of the stairs or something." And all that, I never believed that. You know, I just didn't. No, not at all.
So, have you seen a ghost then?
Well, I'll tell you my story if you want.
All right, okay.
Told this story before you tell it?
Is it going to be boring?
No. I want to know if you've told it already because I want to make you have.
It's a story that's known to me, my friends, and my family.
No, I meant have you told it on air before?
Maybe not. I don't think I have necessarily, no.
Okay,
Magpie story or something. It's a magpie story. This was a sign I had. The morning my grandmother died.
I like magpies. I've got two in my garden.
Well, I had a long time. I'm not superstitious particularly, not really. But I did have this thing with magpies. There's the one when you see one and you say, good morning, Mr. Magpie, or something. There's one for sorrow, two for joy. So if you only see one, it's so, you know, to counteract the sorrow, you say. And I used to have a little habit of saying that, a silly superstition, really. I didn't have any others at all. I've had that for years, just on and off a little bit. Something about magpies for some reason. I don't do it with any other things. I'll walk under ladders. I don't mind.
But, no, I don't.
So anyway, and I didn't believe in, you know, I didn't had never had a direct spiritual experience. No way. Don't know why at all. You know, I can't say I did. I didn't really believe those stories when people said they'd had a sign and they thought they were spiritual. I kind of thought, oh, bless them. You know, they're kind of kidding themselves, you know. That's what I thought. My morning my grandmother died. Yeah. I went to the window for the first time to open the curtains that morning, and sunlight came shooting straight through, and there was a magpie directly outside, and that would catch my eye. I've never seen a magpie in my front garden. I'd never seen one that close. It was just right in front of me, in my face on the grass, just right down there as I looked. And it filled me with kind of a joy straight away, this kind of feeling. And the combination of the sunlight as well, it all helped, you know. So then I rushed to sit to my instinct with, oh, go and find another one. You know, with two for joy. I'm trying to look out the back garden to see as it flew off because it instantly skedaddled. And as it went, I just saw it in the corner of my eye, just at the top, just heading off into the sunlight of this day. And this massively strong image came over me and kind of really wave of joy filled me. And I kind of thought, wow, there you go. I've just been conned by a bird there. It just made me feel really good for a second because I thought it was my grandmother. So I went over to Facebook and I just sat down. I thought, God, I'm an idiot. And I posted it and I said, I just felt I had a real sign for my grandmother. It's so strange. I said, I know I feel. It felt joyful and it just felt like it, even if it wasn't. Okay, so I posted that on Facebook as evidence. And then I got on my bike and I went down to work. And there's an army training ground on the way down to work. I go down there every day, so twice a day. I might come up and down there for a few years. And I see magpies down there, and I told you I was superstitious about them, so I always would notice how many there were down there, always. And I always had a little look, and I had a look when I went past this little thing. And this one day, you know, the most I'd ever seen down there, I think probably six I'd seen down there over the course of 4 years or something. And then that morning after that magpie experience in my garden, I went down there, and there was one on the corner of this park as I went down to cycle past it, going cheep, 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 going crazy. So I signaled up and waved up to it like a lunatic going, oh, good morning. You know, it must be you, Granny, which was my grandmother, what a good grandmother. And as I went past the bird, the park opened up in the sunlight of that spring morning, and there was 14 more there laid out in the sun. And I don't know. It just happened, you know. So this, again, this feeling of, wow, you know. And so then there was two turned up. It happened. It went on and on. My family don't believe me. I think I'm an idiot. You know, not an idiot. They don't really, but I can just tell they didn't.
Well, they just believe you're superstitious, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the funeral, we turned up, and there were two there. There were two there. Two came to my back garden. In my back, and they moved and nested in the tree right next to my back garden. I could see from my shed. It was bizarre. It hasn't happened since. They've gone, never nested again. It didn't. It's just this time it happened. And it really felt real. Now, I don't know what's going on there, Mojo, but that's an honest experience I had, and it changed. It was profound to me. And I don't know, still don't know, but my mind's been open so much with things with what we learn, that I really know that I don't know the truth.
Well, the mind is very powerful. The most powerful thing that we don't understand, the most powerful weapon we don't understand, that maybe speaks to it a little bit, helped you and made you believe, then in a way it was very therapeutic for you. It could have been quite the coincidence that your mind decided to use in a positive way.
Well, I think I have to analyze that in that way, and except that there could be, it was purely a coincidence, a profound one, an incredible one, really. The continued coincidences, and the way, yeah, it's surprising. I came up with thoughts on it that maybe I am deluding myself. It is easy to see that it could be reassuring, and I kind of wanted to see these things, but perhaps, you know, because I fully believed it. I believed that it was happening, and it did happen, sort of thing. So perhaps
the power of belief is fantastic. It's very hard to break power as well, and it's easy to induce. All we really talk about on Fakeologist is belief. Myths, create them, how to break them, how to expose them, how to shape them. It's study of the mind, this website, really.
Well, with the way we see these things subliminally referenced in all sorts of ways, we don't know how we receive information, do we, and how we really receive it, and how what's really going on. And yeah, I think there's a heck of a lot going on that we don't know about, probably, isn't there? So the truth, again, despite all the amazing things we've already discovered, it's probably, you know, another few leaps amazing again. It's just wondrous. And like you say, will we ever live to know anything, what the planet looks like, let alone, you know, what it's all about? It's all interesting.
Well, I hope
stuff,
we live, in light of my friend's death, I hope we learn how to cure cancer or at least prevent it. But that would be more of a priority than finding out the nature of what we live on. But they're all mysteries, and they're all really things that, not known by almost everybody.
Are you there, Mojo?
Can I say something about cancer?
My driveway now, so I'm going to leave you guys while I go take some medicine, which we call food, which is good medicine. So I'll leave you guys, and I'll listen back, as they say on the podcast. So have some good.
Yeah, you've dragged us, you beast. You've dragged us in the live stream again. I wish I could just. We were talking in anonymously off.
Can we
off.
Go back?
Can we go back?
We're still live.
Yeah,
well,
you
we're
can
giving.
Go.
Yeah, I always feel like, oh no. I was just having a, just trying to relax. I've probably come out. I feel embarrassed now for telling that story because you see, even
no,
I
no,
doubt it.
It's interesting. No, it's interesting. It's fine. good. I'm sure everyone has a story like that, really.
It's good. Real.
It was good, Tom. Well, it's real, for sure. It's
something's
a real story.
On. There's these signs with from nature, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah, but hey, Bab, yeah, good to talk to you, man. Talk to you soon. He's got quite busy on the audit. Loads going on.
Love you. I can't keep up. I'm just going to go in and post uninstall media and Lumberjack and Rollo. I'm going to go put that up now.
It's all good fun. All right, take care. See ya.
Hey, guys. Mojo.
Just say one thing. Have you seen the trees that grew in Madagascar?
I don't even know anything about it. Madagascar is near, off African East African coast, isn't it?
Yeah. They've got amazing trees. Like, have a look.
Are they real?
Google it.
I'll Google it, mate. I'll Google it.
They've got huge trunks.
Boy, don't get too obscene on the channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Calm down, you.
Oh, I love them. They're just gorgeous. I'd actually like to live in Madagascar if I could. Can I seek asylum?
Okay. All right, I'm gonna sign off now and go have some.
Okay, bye bye. Bye. There.
Hi.
You still there?
Yeah, sort of. I love trees with big trunks too.
They're beautiful. I mean, I'd love to see them in real life. I'd absolutely love to go to Madagascar, like, and or the other one,
Manchester.
No. I've been through it on the motorway.
Oh, I know. Birmingham.
No, I hate that. It's full of fucking...
Birmingham, one of the most beautiful cities in the British Isles. Yes. We based it on roads, really. Roads and car plants.
Oh, dear.
Are we still in
a live stream? Can we go back to the lobby?
Yeah, let's save people. Sort of listening through sort of hours of drivel. Let's go back to the lobby.
I'm in the lobby.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Watch for those magpies. See you.
How do I click on you? Oh, hiya.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
You're still in the live stream. Do you want to stay there?
I know. I'm not sure what you do, though.
Oh, okay. Just click back on... If you hold on, press and hold and click, you put yourself back on and click back on the lobby.
1-1-2-2. 1-1-1-2-2-2.
Well, I nearly said 3-3-3, but that's probably a little bit too cabalistic or something.
What is all this stuff then? CSOV. What does that mean? You've got an O, I've got a V. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Come on, Mojo. Come across. How do we move her? I don't think we can we? Move to. Can't do that. Oh, well. Whatever. Hey, Ham.
This is a public announcement.
Am I the only one who can speak?
I can speak. I'm just trying to get... I'm trying to multitask and seeing if I can help Mojo in. I'm not sure. I think she can get in here, can't she?
She's a noisy girl. Good grief. Needs to be prescribed a cork. Don't know how to move her. If you go down to the bottom of Move Client to Your Own Channel, but I click on it and it says you have insufficient permissions...
Supposedly he gave me some permissions, and I'm probably just overlooking something here like a fool, but I'm trying here. Yeah, he said, I've got to right click on her. And
that's right, and then right at the very bottom, move client to own channel. You've got an O, I wonder what that means. Operator, there we go. That's what you are. And I've got voice.
Yeah, so if I'm an operator, I should be able to perhaps do something. And now we're in fucking live stream, and we've been recorded, and we're wasting people's fucking time again. Excuse us. Typo's here now. Talk, typo.
I'll go and powder my nose for a minute. How do we put this on?
Welcome back.
You're okay, Topo? Let me poke you. Hang on a minute. There. Ah! That told you. Oh, yeah. Come on! I don't think she likes it. I think there's something that's beyond just, like, not being able to do it. I think she's not keen on the idea of actually... being out there, live on air, receivable by the International Space Station, the astronauts.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is going to be seen by, listened to by millions, clearly. the ever-burgeoning audience.
We'll be in the top 10 programmes after Coronation Street and the EastEnders or whatever it is.
Yeah, you've seen all those migrants, refugees coming across. I mean, you know, you wonder what all the fuss was about. It's about getting here for this stuff.
Getting into the live stream.
Hear this show.
As if. Oh, my God. Have you got anything going on locally near you? There's, like, some well-meaning, daft old bint locally who's collecting... It was, like, a huge list of things. What the fuck do you want all that for? Like, large cooking pots for cooking on an open fire. What the fuck? What's going on here?
I saw this pair that the German Chancellor or something went over to Syria and gave this woman and her child, who were just about to go on this trip to Germany or whatever, a bunch of toys. You know,
really?
It's the last thing you want. It's the thing you throw out when you're moving home, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you don't these boxes. You know, Monopoly. You know,
something like that. God.
Snakes and ladders. You know, I don't need this shit. Don't give me this crap. You know, but there it was presented, and the woman was in a red dress, you know, the guy was in his red T-shirt there, and there she was handing them over this bag. Just so symbolic, isn't it? You know, that level, you know, it's not no big deal about the colours, but it's just the way it's presented is just so basically.
Where's all that going? I can't really work that out, really. I mean, it's going to be provide the pretext for some sort of military escapades in Syria, you know, supposed increase in bombing to blast away ISIS or ISIL or whatever, Persil or whatever they're called. And but locally, I mean, in on this continent, what the fuck is all that about? Just loosening us up for the idea of mass immigration and therefore, you know, greater, you know, very much a dilution of our living standards and...
People talk in these terms of where it's going or where is it going, and they always have within the alternative everything, isn't it just sort of going around on the spot sort of thing, really? Is it just not continued power, and it has to have a story to it to go somewhere, but it just sort of snakes in its own way as it goes through
that's
history.
Right, yeah. And there's nothing actually being done in any sort of coordinated way. I kind of got the view that there were probably like a handful of like very heavily overloaded trains coming in from wherever it was, Bulgaria, was it, crossing the border, crossing from Turkey into Bulgaria, and then just like, you know, very symbolic ones that were just sort of waved in, and there was a sort of iconic bit of footage there where they were being offered bottled water for some reason. There were like these cops turned up from the middle of nowhere and were trying to hand out bottled water, which these so-called immigrants, refugees, migrants, whatever you want to call them, were throwing on the track, were sort of very symbolically throwing these bottles that they've been given of bottled water, throwing them on the train.
Argos pointed out, and he said, is it a Catholic thing? Because they refused the crisps and the bottled water.
Oh, I see.
He thought it was possibly that.
It took me a little while to actually work out what was going on there, but... I don't know. I guess that was just... I can quite believe we've got loads of migrants here who were, like, shipped in for back-breaking work, digging up potatoes and strawberries, you know, picking strawberries and everything else. And they're only... And they are just basically economic migrants who are treated like shit, you know. They occasionally have these sit-downs where they block the road and, you know, demand proper pay and proper... They're all living in illegal caravan settlements, you know, like trailer parks, I guess you'd say in America. And they don't even have enough money to actually go home. They're, like, captive here because they have to earn so much money before they can actually pay for their flights home again. And they've been ripped off on their flight over here. They paid, like, 600 quid for a flight from Poland that probably is, like... It's like £29 with EasyJet or something or other. And they paid this money to actually be sort of accommodated here. And they have to work their way sort of through as economic agricultural, what can you call them, itinerant agricultural labourers to try and get enough money to actually get home again. And so I guess the same trick could well have been played on people coming into Bulgaria and across from Turkey into Greece and wherever else, you know. But I don't know. It doesn't strike me as valid in any particular way, but... Anyway, I'm rambling again.
I mean, perhaps it breaks down the fabric of the identity, of social identity, this sort of continued sort of gentle migration a little bit, and this blending. And it helps sort of meld things in a bit and sort of homogenise us all a bit. And it just massages it in a bit as goes continued control, just keeps writing its little stories, keeping us, you know,
and
going
I guess
forward.
One thing I often thought, I mean, I've got no problems at all. I've got no qualms whatsoever about, I do kind of wince a little bit when I can't actually converse with somebody. Like I got a taxi the other day and I thought, Jesus Christ, I can't even tell this taxi driver where I live. And, you know, it's kind of like, he's just like gesturing and like, Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's me being a little bit racist. But I kind of think if you're not assimilated enough to actually even be able to drive a taxi, then fucking hell. You know, it's kind of like, how on earth do you live your day-to-day life? You know, like, you know, in terms of money and anything else, you know. But anyway, certainly don't have no particular patriotic feeling that Britain should be for Brits only or anything else. But I kind of got the feeling that also the British Empire, if we can still assume it still exists, likes to pluck out of each particular country around the world a certain group of people, bring them over here and bring them into a sort of like, what's the word that you'd often use, like a diaspora for each particular nation. So like have a sort of an Iranian community in Britain that can then be used as if to sort of, if necessary, to sort of use as a sort of like an intelligence grouping, if you know, to, you know, if necessary, to then implant back where they ever they came from with, you know, having been engendered in British ways of life and British standards and British whatever else, you know, and then push back wherever they came from to sort of, you know, extend the reach of the empire, as it were. Anyway, sorry, I'm rabbiting on. You tell me to shut up, Mojo.
No, I love it.
Another
yeah,
one.
Yeah, well, I thought I was getting your point. It was interesting. Well, I thought you were waffling a bit, but good old Mojo. She likes you now, really, after that bad start.
Yeah.
I know, but it's, you know.
Oh, you're taking a fucking piss.
You're not taking a piss.
You have to say that with a can of. What was that? The horrible Scottish lager. What was that? Not Carling. What's
Jocks.
It called? Tennent's. Tennent's Super, isn't it? Oh, God, that's a drink.
Yeah,
have you ever tried that?
I like that.
Tennent's. Oh, God.
That's warming. Warming. 8%.
I like Stella.
You like Stella?
Yeah.
You use a straw. Are you a lady?
That's funny.
No, you're not, are you? You're not a lady. I think you have ice in it.
That's it. In a laugh? Possibly not.
You're no lady. You don't even drink your Stella through a straw.
No.
Stella, I quit alcohol six years ago now.
Did you?
But obviously because I liked it very much. So I can talk about it.
Yeah, I should really. It's kind of like, oh, whatever. Anyway.
Yes, you haven't heard him when he gets a bit, he can get a bit baity when he has had a little bit too much.
It's usually cider. Cider, I'm afraid, is I think it does something to my brain, sort of pickling it.
I'll wax you, Peter. I'll wax you. I seem to remember at one point.
Did I say that, did I? I'll wax him. He probably needs it.
Peen's back in.
What's that?
Peen's back in. She was around earlier, but when we started talking about our sex lives and being dragged around the room by your hair, she disappeared. Peen, please, I'm so sorry about that. I'm sorry for mentioning it again, actually, but please, you're welcome back. And where's Typo? Speak up. Please, you're welcome to it at any point. This is Fakeologist Radio, and you're listening to Typo Error.
That's really funny.
I'll give him another poke.
Fuck you.
There we go. That told him. That bloody told him, didn't it?
User disconnected from your channel.
Oh no, Peenin's gone again, and I feel guilty.
La la la.
So yes, what's the new in the world of fake? Well, what's fake in Aberdeen today, Mojo?
What's fake in Aberdeen?
Our fish fake.
Fish fake. I don't like fish.
You don't like fish?
No.
All right, that's a bad subject for you then. Yeah, I don't know. What do you like? I don't know. Insects?
No, I locusts. Don't like them. Picasso.
Oh, I love Picasso. I love all the major painters. I had a question on painters. Was the is it Turner did a painting of the Stonehenge? Was it a fake?
Yeah. Oh dear, oh dear.
Oh, fuck off.
Fuck you. Oh, hey then you.
Hey, and Mojo said fuck off because you know what? She told me earlier, she revealed it, and it just shows you how people can be moved by such great monuments, some such ancient stones. She had sex on Stonehenge.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you really? Who
yeah,
did?
I did. A fucking seals he shagged at Stonehenge.
Dear.
Yeah. Perhaps it was you that broke that rock. Well, made that threat in it.
Oh, dear. But have you got any photos to prove it? Send them to that Masashutu Matimoto. See what he says.
Hey, Japanese!
I emailed him, he never replied. I went to loads of length. He's moved on now.
Really?
Pardon?
Did you really email a general wife of your hall?
Yeah. I did, yeah. I put like a massive post on there because I was kind of like trying to work out when the first news report about Stonehenge was. And it seemed to be known as a sort of area where you got hijacked by highwaymen, you know, sort of in the sort of about 1800s. Cause it's
that
kind
sounds
of
about right, doesn't it? Hijacking.
They were psyops of their time, these highwaymen. I'm pretty sure the whole thing was made up, but it was like a particular stretch of road where 25 men or 27 men and 11 women had sort of gone missing by presumed shot by highwaymen.
Yeah, like a Bermuda Triangle thing, getting a kind of mystique about the area, telling about this sort of fake death or these sort of deaths.
Yeah, exactly, that was exactly it. Yeah, that's what I wrote to that guy. Maybe it was a bit... I can't work out what the fuck he's going on about now. It's like looking at the ancient masters, you know, past masters and portraits and things, but it's all in Japanese. So I think, what the fuck's all this? And he's looking at it and sort of drawing points at their faces and their boobs and whatever else, you know. And have you had a look at his website, his YouTube channel? I forget his name now.
The thing is, the amazing thing is that it's so difficult to find, to get to the truth and everything. I mean, how ignorant am I that I know so little about so many things?
Yeah, especially, likewise.
But I hear him talk, and I asked him the question, and he said, I've got the answer, you know, he's got the answer to the world and to everything. And it was, you know, I said, oh, my God.
It's kind of got it into the British as well, which is kind of funny. It's like, as if we're all responsible for Stonehenge. We all had a little bit of help, you know. We all sort of, you know, it was a sort of like a joint effort with everyone. It was like, even the Scots had a little helping hand in it.
I mean, it's a fantastic myth. I mean, these are the things. We understand the power of myth, and we understand that principle, how something could work like that. And we'd understand a story from the past of a culture that had that and did something like that. And we understand, we do understand how these things work. We have 1984 to tell us how this kind of thing kind of works. So we're told how it works, but it seems that we could have, as a kind of presented view and as a kind of day-to-day life, we seem to be happy to take the kind of comfortable lie and the ones that makes us feel good. Is that right? Is that some kind of analysis?
Yeah, definitely so. Let me see if I can find him, whatever his name was. Gets very angry. Very, very angry man.
What, the Japanese guy?
The British have done... That was like the sum answer of it, or the end of it all. The British have tricked us, you know.
75 years later after the Second World War, finally Japanese bring down British Empire with Stonehenge, you are there. You are dead. You are there for Japanese kill you. Fuck you, England.
I said to him that maybe there was fakery over his side of the world and about Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and he just completely stepped over it as if nothing had been said at all. You know, it's kind of like,
yeah, I mean, he's great. He's well up on that historical revisionism, but is he going to stop there? You know, what does he say about Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
If I can find it, I can't remember what his name is now. It's like, oh God, as if I remember that. It was kind of like, what was his name now?
No, it wasn't Bert Kwok, but he got in everything, didn't he? He gets everywhere, Bert.
Let's have a look. I can't find him now. I don't know where he went. Difficult stuff. Difficult finding him. I guess you should, like, focus. You need to, I don't know who said it, but somebody said that, like, famous quote was that obsessives of the world are some of the most important people who focus on one particular thing for the rest of their lives. You know, they're the ones who actually provide the groundbreaking advancements made and everything else. And I guess that's true for psyops, you know, discovery and sort of like hoax unraveling and everything else. It's like these people who like move from talking about the Mona Lisa to Stonehenge are kind of like spreading their expertise rather too thinly. So here he is, Hiroshi Hayashi. There he is.
So, yeah, what else is he talking about? And is he spreading himself thin? I agree with you. I think that's a good point.
Look at that stuff on there. Like, what the fuck is he going... Is Dotaku a bell? Is it a bell? What's a bell? A boomerang-shaped UFO. Stonehenge as calendar. Mystery of Dotaku. And so it goes on.
I think for our international listeners and any true spirit of his videos, in Japanese.
I invited him over to Fakeologist.com. I told him to come over and chat with us. He just stepped over my comment. He does reply to people, but I put about half an hour into a YouTube message, and he didn't even reply to it. So I guess he's busy moving on to Rembrandt now and Venus de Milo and with male genital organ by Hiroshi Hayasaki.
The little pisser of Belgium. What?
I got you on. You're on now. You're on, Typo.
Oh, all right, then. I was... Hang on. It's too early. Well, I didn't know I wasn't on time. Hey. I wasted all my best material.
Oh, no, you've been talking the whole time. Unbelievable.
Am I? I've been recording it. Well, it's not me, Tom.
Ladies and gentlemen, I do apologise for unmuting Typo Harry's microphone.
You know, I wanted to prove I'm not a fake. I'm not... Sorry, mate.
We should return to slick Fakeologist radio.
Yes, we'll
proceedings
slick
as soon
like.
As possible. Let's just sort this out here. Good evening. Welcome. You just turned it back on, Typo. Mojo and
thank
Hi
you very
here,
much. But it's not all about me and it's not about you. It's about my mate Phil, a new voice of Fakeologist. A very reasonable, very considered voice. I've used his name in vain several times before. While talking to Psyoptic, and as unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, and so is he, without going through the testimony of his, what do you call it? Piercing the veil. But he's here, my mate Phil's here, and he's listened to all the audio, and I don't know whether he's on side, we don't talk about it, we're not like that, we're not conspiring, are we, Phil? Never have done. But he's here, he's a genuine voice, and he finds some of the things who find interesting. He quite likes Mojo's sexy giggle as well, didn't you? Is that what you said, Phil?
Recently I've become obsessed.
You've never heard him. Do you do a sound check, Charlie?
Chainsaw thing. Every guy wants to play with a chainsaw. And I got bitten by the bug.
Right. Well, that's
an excuse to use one.
That's not the point.
Become ridiculous.
It has become ridiculous. But yeah, we're trying to have a chat. I'd like to pull you on some of your Japanese pronunciation there, Tom.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for reminding me of some old George Orwell books that I read years ago last night.
Oh, isn't it? I know you didn't attend there, but being even hanging around Cambridge must be, an education in itself. And whether it's true or not, some people may say the footage is fake. I may have seen you perform once or twice, possibly. Was there ever a thing called the Strawberry Fair or something like that around your way?
Yes, there was a yearly free fair.
I know there was a big Strawberry Fair that used to be up in Glasgow or something, something to do with Spiral Tribe and all that. But I do remember going to Cambridge once or twice. Never managed to find my way back into it because they must have built a road that I didn't know how to get there.
WCR, I remember that.
And I remember dancing in a rave in Aberdeen with you, didn't I? But I got a feeling I must have seen you knocking about once or twice, Tom, in the, in the whole history of life. But it's not about us, it's about Phil. My new mate Phil, would you like to give it?
Shine the spotlight on me on this.
Well, I'm going to have to because we have wasted our best material up until now. And there might be a buzz on the microphone. Well, moral dilemmas is what it's all about. And it was a piss poor performance the other day, if that's the word. It really isn't a performance, never is. I felt crestfallen when I was accused of being a military operative and a patient and all that because. Once or twice, I thought, I was talking over it, but I was very uncomfortable about it. Is that you again, Mojo, yawning? But yeah,
me,
I
sorry.
Thought I'd introduce, me. I think I'd introduce old, my mate, Phil. And,
hello, Phil.
Hi there.
This is Psyopsicon. He won't get any nearer the microphone, even if I wanted him to. Most of these subjects are right up his street.
John's
including
in
the flat earth, but he doesn't want to say so, do you, Phil?
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm sure we could have a good conversation on something we're all keen on, we'd all like to talk about, possibly.
All right, then, well, I'll be talking mainly about booze, and, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I've only just butted in, haven't I? I've been listening 100%. I haven't taken any notes at all. But let's see if we can rewind and remember one or two of the salient points that I'd like to address. I'm
well,
I'd
just
if
I'd
I can
like
remember.
To, well, no, I mean, I think clearly this is useful that you've been listening. I wonder if I could just pick you up on some of the details of the.
Some, I never ever stopped listening. I never ever stopped listening. The other day on the big 9/11, and I wish, you know, I mean, I have got nothing to say at all. I don't really take too much of it that seriously, but surely that's part of the fate, because we get to a point where we get sick of this kind of shit, you know? Even though we kind of, well, we, fuck
it,
we
seem to have released the Zeebrugge tape. Not the Zeebrugge tape.
So I told you Phil's new to this guy. Yeah, the Zeebrugge tape there.
The Zeebrugge tape, yeah. Released it over. Well,
now you know somebody who knows Mr. Zeebrugge, so it can't be
2 or 3 years later. I never used to.
Alright. Well, crack on.
One of the main scientists who analysed the Zeebrugge film came up with the theory of the how the dinosaurs were wiped out. Old Alvarez.
Was it the theory we favour today?
You can't eat it. The
comet asteroid.
Typo and Paul. Is it Paul? Is it saying? Yeah, you're echoing really quite like loudly.
Yeah, it's going to be evil. I've got a buzz and all this. I don't know whether it's me. Sometimes the audio's cool. Other times it isn't. I've not got the earbuds in.
Exactly. It's all about your playback, your end. So if you and Paul are listening to it, unfortunately, while you're speaking with an open mic, it's going to be too much when someone else is speaking.
Although this TeamSpeak's working well. You know, for years, until Microsoft bought Skype, we never had a problem, even on a dongle. I mean, you know, it could be... Ah, well, if it's... Mind you, I've listened to some terrible audio in the past, as I say.
We do pull the mic out and open the mic.
No, you just speak up. And, and there's also somebody else... What have they done? Pull the plug.
Switch the Wi-Fi speakers off.
Couldn't do that. We won't be able to hear anybody else.
That'll be till
you. I think we just plough through. Like Rolo would say, we just keep ploughing through. We don't find ourselves phase.
So how much extra equipment have we got to buy to achieve this?
We haven't got any. We've done well with the Black X.
We've just got to get the settings right on the user interface.
Come on, Phil. We're old hands at this game. Now, making yourself understand, proving that the Earth is flat. I'm not here to debate these things. I really am. But I am hanging on every word. Well, it strikes me.
I think somebody said you'd spin off because it'd be a gramophone record.
How long did you...
That's only true if gravity works.
How long did you pour over Plato's works to try and get to some point where you...
It was my introduction to philosophy.
Right.
Great. Somebody explain like how a society
once you're
organised and works.
Yeah. It seems alright.
It holds true
up until now, and it seems that there are voices all over. And again, I don't believe the Second World War.
Psychology.
Yes, well,
and
if you don't study psychology, you can't be.
Gentlemen, as much as this is a fascinating insight into the
conversation.
Yeah, no, we're hearing you completely. It's like you've got a prize and an interesting two-way conversation going on in another room. Four people sitting here just listening. Yeah, it's pretty loud, man. You might be better just muting for now and having you can listen to us and move your mic. Should we do that as you were doing before?
If you've got something to say. Well, I've said a microphone.
What are you doing, Typo?
You're broadcasting.
Saxophone player. Do you need a saxophone player for the band, Tom? I'll introduce you to Philomena. Say hi, Philomena. Go on.
Hi.
Hi, this is Philomena.
We have female with us.
Female professional musician.
Hello, Philomena.
Hiya.
I've seen your orchestra. I've heard your orchestra is fantastic.
Well, the Hanging Wives Coat. I told you.
I think she mainly played live.
And you know they were talking about David Bowie's eyes, you know, Tom. And they say they're different colours.
Yeah, one's red and one's blue, and he's an alien from Mars. And he was a good space oddity.
The same
he was a good little precursor for the old Mars propaganda, wasn't he? Is there life on Mars? Sorry, yeah, go on. His eyes
were... He's got those funky chops, you know. Yeah, well, I don't know. I ain't a musician.
Hunky Dory was my favourite album.
I keep
love
asking
that album.
I say, how did you do that one? I say, come on, can I count? But you know, with this Audacity and this Adobe and all this, and these kids, and they really get older these tunes and these riffs. I don't know. I didn't really, you know, I wouldn't know. I noticed that somebody put Chris Christopherson up today. I beat the devil on fakeologist.com.
Yeah, Ab was talking about it earlier. Yeah, great song. I suppose when I thought about it, I thought, what do I not quite go with that song? And I suppose it's the devil reference.
I always like devil tunes.
Yeah, so have I. But it's like living by that paradigm, isn't it? It's that good and evil, devil and...
I suppose that was all about, the blues, I suppose.
I thought it struck me that Sympathy for the Devil was an interesting song. The lyrics of that song was very much...
One of the ones that turned me on was I'd Rather Be the Devil, John Marsh. You know, Solid Air. Might not have been up your street and all that. But I remember it being a big turning kind of thing for me. I would listen to the album over and over again. And I think he was fairly honest in his way. You know, he kept it at bay. But I wouldn't know how come, you know. I don't know how folk musicians were infiltrated. I don't know. One of these things that kind of gets to me, because I'm from Birmingham, and there was a big band called UB40, and they played what you call white man's
Reggae.
Well, and so as soon as they invented the Rastafari ANA, about 1968,
Do you know Spiral Eye from Tamworth? They're friends of mine.
Yes, I always call them Spiral Tribe, but yeah, kinda. But Peripherize, really, and Julian Cope, I mean, he's the old anti-Aquarian in the world, and he's got his scene. And there's everybody at every level, as you said in the past, there's always somebody at every level to catch it somewhere along the line. And it's, you know, with all this, I don't know what he's fucking, he don't have to get on my nerves, that Jan Irving, you know, one of these leaders of this alternative, all of a sudden... That's Phil. What do you got now? You got some numb, yardy weird. And they're revealing the method, as people say, and it seems like a bit disingenuous, isn't it? Because they're just handing over power to the next bunch.
Well, yeah, I guess so. This is Cough A.
She works in one of those fucking Aberdeen smoking, fish smoking plants.
Welcome to the 2015 World Coughing Championship.
We're in with the coughing. I'm gonna have a pipe of claymore just to clear my palate, and I think I'm in with a smoker's chance in this one. I wish I'd have known it was 2016 and I got into training.
Yes, typo error is only 17 years old, ladies and gentlemen. This is what happens if you smoke. What was it?
You red bang all the while.
Oh, yeah, it's...
One of the things I'm trying to get at, Tom, without being, like, overly familiar, if you don't mind me saying so.
I've never met you before, but, yeah.
About myself in the third person, but I do include Phil when I do it, because when we say typo error, I like to think Phil's here, because he's fairly rational, but he's not on top form tonight. But one of the things, the faking kind of game... makeup, persona, I mean, I'm not too bothered about the fact that they make up the idea that there's been a tank battle in the shape of some kind of drills to see if we can get something else working. You're quite keen on armour piercing. Oh, before I finish, I'm rambling. It's nothing. This is a genuine contribution to what we consider fakeology. And I'm sorry, I read all your stuff. I'm gonna get a new arse ripped if I try and commit anything to what do you call it? Hard disk. Anyway, I wouldn't like to print anything. But one of the ones that we were thinking about was that what was the gun thing down at Mucklower? Sarpsican might know about this.
What's that again?
It's not really a psyop, but it was almost as we were moving into a like letting the Yanks take over. Not the Yanks take over, but we had a super gun. Now the guy that did it, Matrix Churchill.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, we had that. I always point to Phil. I say, look, I switched off the telly when the Westland helicopter thing got. But the point that Phil always makes, it was, but it doesn't matter what happened, it was this kind of gagging order that went on.
I've forgotten the whole main part of the story, really. But they were building, supposedly, components for building this enormous gun, wasn't it? And they would ship to Iraq, and there was a question over whether they were even components of a gun at all, or whether they were just brain.
The guy who designed it for them, or was recruited, did consultancy for him.
It's not rocket science.
He was Scandinavian of some ilk. he was assassinated.
Bingo.
Pretty sure he was assassinated, like murdered in the streets.
And then our chap, what happened to him? He just had a public immunity gagging order.
He was aristocracy. Clark. Was it Kenneth Clark?
And we find ourselves in the position we are, which was not that long ago, really.
Well, he issued this certificate, which is like basically get on with it, go ahead.
Yes, crack on.
It's authorised, all normal.
You got double prohibitions, and then the press got hold of it.
It's public interest.
Well, the public interest. Certificate. Public interest immunity. I was asking Sciopsican the other day about Peter Wright, the first of the whistleblowers. I thought, what's all this public? One of the last hoorahs of some of these publishing.
Peter Wright.
Sorry, chaps.
I read Spycatcher. I read that. Yeah, I heard you talk about that.
Well, the other day I had like dyspepsia and I was happy to say hello and something like that. Because I would like to hammer these things out in the mind, you know, I can't remember anything. And I was radicalised to the point I've never, ever, and Bernadette will back this up, or even though she's not known me for this long, and Philomena will do, won't you, Philomena? And I have not shopped at Marks and Spencer's since 1981. I know it's about going into Marks and Spencer's. Yes, I didn't. Because they told me they'd be horrible to all the, you know. And then I met a kid. Well, look, behead me if this ain't the truth. I met a kid in Amsterdam and his name was Psycho Anderson. Oh, hey, another psycho. Anyway, his story was, just before surfing became professional, he was half a surfer, he was a bit of a fool. Bit of a fallout kid, and he's in South Africa. That's about it. And long and short of it, he went over there, and they let during the summer holidays, they let a black American surfer by half beat him because there were no black American surfers except at this particular school in the holidays, which is a git posh. I don't know, it's Ivy League. And he was a good-natured fella, so when the black fella, and he did invent one or two moves, I don't know when he's on YouTube, I don't suppose he is, but he ended up working for Camel Laird or somebody. Or
Psycho
Anderson. Anyway, the long and the short of it was, as I got to know him over not that long, he told me that Nelson Mandela in the 70s used to go and stop at his auntie's bed and breakfast in Bloemfontein every weekend. He'd turn up Thursday, he'd run his office out there till about Monday, Tuesday, and then he'd turn up, he'd just do Wednesdays and Thursdays. Now, the fucking hell, logistically speaking, I wouldn't know whether that was possible or not. In fact, I wouldn't even want to look into it. I wouldn't want to say it was week in, week out. I
told you this.
But Psycho Steve, yeah. And, you know, he spoke 23 fucking South African language. He was a natural fellow of his environment. He didn't think he was letting anybody into any big secrets.
You think he basically was a surfer dude, and he was pretty integrated with the black guys.
All his life, he knew how to fight tarantulas. He could speak fucking Zulu, Swahili. He was a cool dude, man. And he went to America. And when I knew him, he was working in Amsterdam. He was working on the underground refitting trains. And he told me, he's chatting, there's no ifs, no buts, and he weren't trying to... like, let anybody in and nod and wink or anything. So, yeah, he used to come and stop with me, aren't he? Now, and one of the reasons I can, like, triangulate and repoint this is because you remember the fast bowler for Warwickshire, whatever his name was, Andy Summer, I can't remember. But he was all right at the time, if you like cricket. And you don't believe it.
Mike Hendricks.
No, I tell you what his name was. Fast bowler for Warwickshire. I was going to say that to you, Tom, you know. How hard must it be for you to watch the sport now, looking at it like that, being a sportsman? You said you were like, when you say I was a good football player, well, a shit football player wouldn't say he was any good, really, would he? And you said, yeah, I was all right, I was at a level. Cambridge, you could have played rugby. But you know, I can't watch football. I'm not taking any notice in my life.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? And I think it's a good point, because you don't want to take away the some pleasure that you had in your life by finding that out, do you, by this new information, you know?
I did it. I switched it off years ago.
I can still find some pleasure in sports to an extent. It doesn't have to be all about the winning.
You know, but it's almost like that's the game.
I find myself following it like you follow the news or the current affairs in a way, as a kind of presented reality, like watching a play, you know. Do you see what I mean?
And hoping.
And it involves their sport within that, and it's still impressive athleticism within it. And whatever they're doing, my God, it's impressive.
Yes, you know, of course, but then we also know that...
To an extent.
But look, there must have been a million talents that have been dampened. A million kids that they couldn't quite handle, but they did have that knockout punch. A million kids that wouldn't put up for that, you know, that, what was it, that record breakers kind of style, that taking over that Adidas.
Well, it's like anything. You'd never let a truly, you know, true great suppressed talent would be suppressed or at various areas, wouldn't it? You know, but I think great talented footballers will rise to the top and they will be used. You know, natural talent will be there and it will be just hijacked.
All kids love football.
They'll just be absorbed into the system. As like music is the same, you know, it's just hijacked and used.
This might pinpoint
people are given so much money and then you can't help but be within the system and you're co-opted, you know, naturally.
This might pinpoint me then, Tom, but I'm one of many. My uncle Polly, his real name was Gordon, and the real reason they call people Polly is because, whatever his name, Gordon of the what? What did Gordon do in the war? What was his name?
Gordon
of Cartoon. Not Gordon. Fucking hell, Lord Mayor Baton and fucking Chelmsley. What did Gordon do? What was his title? Sorry, Tom. Anyway, the reason they call my uncle Gordon is because after the war, everybody whose name was Gordon is shortened to Polly, because it was found out that this particular general, or this Allenby took Cartoon, didn't he? Anyway, Gordon, he used to ask his parrot, whose name was Polly, funny enough, what to do about these, you know, the next move. So after the war, everybody was called Gordon, except Scottish people, they used to nickname him Polly. Well, Polly, he was a bit of a driver at Pinewood and man that way. And they, without,
it shows you how powerful these stories from the war were. They were the really caught on. They became folklore. Brit, how things are passed on. Yeah, from the war.
Yes, down to a nickname. Chalk is good enough for anybody called White and all. But Pally, he was on the peripheries, Hertfordshire, where hurricanes hardly ever happen. And Vinnie Jones, for want of a better word, probably a shill. I don't know whether he's on the shill list. Well, Pally got hold of him when he was a kid. Because he was trying to have a fight with a couple of gypsies and he weren't going to win. And he says, you want to pack that? And he says, you want to kick a football? And that's Watford, in that sense. And that was my Uncle Gordon, who, like, possibly changed one, you know, one little fucking scrapper's life into a... And I don't know whether Vinnie Jones would ever take any notice, because he's some right shit now, and he seems to be playing the game, don't know. But, I'm sure everybody gets compromised somewhere along the line.
Vinnie Jones is like, one of those British characters, hasn't he, now? And I know he goes to there's a local shoot here, a very old shoot, traditional sort of old British shoot,
yes,
in a place called Six Mile Bottom. And he's made...
Okay.
He sort of does a bit of shooting there with those classic old sort of faces. And his mates with Ron Wood, and he's a bit of a Hollywood film player, isn't he? So
He becomes a sore, my Uncle Gordon, you can't fight.
This wild card becomes then used as a good, as an agent, in a sense, just by being Vinny.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know, art for sure. It's hardly London, it's hardly the million. But there's one or two of them. They got that kid, that Bradley Walsh, he's on the telly now, debriefing everybody, every day of the fucking week. What do you know about this? What do you know about that?
He's got a really ugly face when he snarls.
Who does?
Vinnie Jones.
I'm not on about him. I'm on about Bradley Walsh. I'm on about all these people. Hertfordshire, because when I didn't know him on that side of the family, but my Uncle Peter, who was ex-Navy, he used to have the joke shop that was next to the Watford Theatre. And I can't even remember stories, but it was a film that was made by James Mason called... Now, I'm getting it wrong with the third man, the grey man, the thin man. But he played an IRA informer in this film. Worst villain in the world, post-war. But the thing was, is James Mason used to knock about round there, and he used to go and watch himself at the picturesque. And then one day, people, like, recognised him, watching himself on the picture, thought he was an IRA informer, and they were going to kick the shit out of him. And my Uncle Peter was closing up the joke shop. And when I say joke shop, I mean it sold farty cushions, funny.
Where was it?
Watford.
Ah, a bit too far south for me. Yeah. Sorry.
And many years ago.
I used to love the joke shop.
Probably in the 50s, the 40s.
Oh, blimey. Sorry.
They were a big, they did a lot of printing round that way.
Did they? Keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Oh, I did.
No,
sorry.
You weren't interrupting. I was just saying. It's like a tale, and Tom's just gone. He was knocking about with somebody down there, and they go on the shoot, and they'll build a dog track, and, you know. Somebody was telling me as well, Tom, you probably know more about it down that way. I wouldn't take Jimmy Percy as a natural Delphic. Well, not an oracle. What am I trying to get at? But you can't believe everybody. But I always found it odd that Freddie Mercury, Phil Collins, and the other kid used to turn up at that place on the top of the hill outside Hounslow or somewhere, where they measure the... And they used to get invited. Jonathan King, he was kind of a meter and greeter around that way. And as far as I know, Jimmy Percy was the only one that told them to go and fuck off.
Well, that's a profound story.
I don't know. I'm just saying, have you heard anything about it?
No, I don't know.
Well, they used to hold a fair on the top, on that mile that they measure. Hounslow, is it? Hounslow,
okay,
is it,
so
Tom?
You're just saying this specific location was relevant. Do you think that was something?
Well,
kind of,
no, I don't know. It just seems like they all kind of... I mean, I can understand Genesis, you know. I mean, they're public school boys. I can understand everybody to some... But it was funny how Freddie and Phil, like, first got the oofle dust sprinkled on them at that gypsies' fair in Hounslow. Do you not think?
Well, these people seem to be from sort of a British musical establishment sort of thing. Is that what you're sort of saying? Yeah.
Well, bloody people, don't they?
Yeah, sheet music.
I mean, you know, Genesis. I'm interested in things like, you know, U2 being a long con.
Oh, I'll tell you a story now. You can I've never had this ratified in my life.
Typo. Yeah, okay.
Sorry, mate. Go on.
Absolutely not. There's loads of people in the room now. There's a bunch of people, and it's fine, but you're dominating, and you guys are getting
okay.
the tanks.
But can I ask you one thing before we do this and speculate if we must? But you kind of had like, you've got an insider's view of this, you hear these things. I mean, walking on sunshine, I thought it was about drugs. I really did, I thought it was about ease.
I know Kimberly very well, the guy who wrote that, and I can tell
you
for
a fact about this
that Walking on Sunshine was not. It's very innocent. He's a very sweet guy, and it's just a positive up-tempo love song, really. Yeah, that's all that is.
All right, then, watch his eyes break, Tom, and watch your eyes break. You said he was his snooker partner.
Yeah,
watch your eyes break, and watch his...
His is 58. Mine's, okay. I think 48, but I think,
You're just saying that because he's a millionaire, aren't you?
Someone's
I was going to say this.
No experts there, you know.
Have you ever heard this, ever? And I heard this more or less at the time. You remember Echo and the Bunnymen? Of course you do. Yeah. So Ian McCullough. Anyway, one day, they're supposed to go to Dublin to go and impress some A&R men from whatever record company it was. Can't remember. And they're supposed to, like, either fly out or go on the, you know, walk over on the boat or whatever you used to do to get at Dublin. But they're of their own, you know, they got their own thing. So they all got fucking proper hammered. They all took loads of gear and just couldn't make it. But the A&R men had already turned up at this pub in Dublin and they were there. And that's how they got the job, is how I heard. It's because Echo turned it down. Echo. Well, that's true, I don't know. But then I found it odd, almost, as though the Echo and the Beach and the Echo and the Bunny and all, after it was forgotten, then we got you two. Whether you've ever heard that, I don't know. But I remember hearing that in about the day it happened, almost. They never fucking showed. Okay. But what happened? Well, they got this other band to do it. And that's the issue as far as I remember it. You probably know more about it than I ever would. But I like to look into this white man's reggae and how come some of the black artists never learned as much as they should have done because we kind of herded people up. You know, we had some good tunes.
Did they think it up all on their own? Nothing
that happened. Well, what Tom says. You can't dismiss this because he said, sorry, Tom, talking over. He said, I read this thing about Chuck Berry. I fucking love. How much do I love Chuck Berry for the moment? I've invited him around here loads of times, but he says when I got out of Nick, he realised it was a corporation. Wise words. Well, let him crack on then. Sorry, Tom.
No, you're right, mate. Right. So who have we got? We've got Kossoff's in the room. And
hey,
Kossoff,
you don't
and
see
Bond
that.
Apparently here, but the microphones are off. I never understand how this all works, but yeah. So I enjoyed your conversation last night. It was nice. I put something on the chat. I said it was like listening to a couple of guys in the pub when it was.
You did.
Having a kind of interesting conversation.
It's like to go again. But
yeah,
I've got nothing to say on the subject.
You got a bit, as you came in and you admitted, you said you got some drink in you tonight, a little bit. I mean, you're coherent and you're great fun, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not really digging anything. And yeah, I do feel like I'm... September Club, I think we got a pay lip service. Wrong way of saying it.
Yes, terrible feedback.
I got good feeling that we really have got to look at this, man. You know, and Simon, he must be under so much fucking pressure in a roundabout way. I mean, I know we're jollying it along. But for fuck's sake, you know, you come across shit like that. Without getting involved, there's no looking back, is there, you know? I mean, forums and hits and taking part and trying to, you know, rationalise and trying to talk about these things, trying to make sense of it, is not necessarily what happens. What happens is it hits you in the face
and you think, fucking hell, it's a little bit different to how I thought it was. And what we got to do, we got to skip around it, or we got to carry on reading, find other anomalies, other things to point at. Or have we got to say, well, it's this or it's that? It can't be both, can it? And
it's like a bit like the world, isn't it? When you haven't got a model, where you haven't got anything to cling on to, and you lose your sort of sometimes.
But how many models have we thrown away? Like Buzz Aldrin, you know, we're throwing models out the fucking limb every day just to keep us going, you know, going forward. But if we haven't got any more models to throw out, what are we doing? We're going to, well, we're not as tough as Buzz Aldrin is, are we? In all outer space. But how much can we jettison until we get to a point where we go, well, this is all right, this is fine.
Well, if you're in a make-believe capsule, you can keep opening that door on the moon and jettison as much as you want forever if it's make-believe, because you're making it up, you know what I mean? I think that's how I see things. Your echo typo is really, it's uncomfortable coming back, I realise.
Is it?
Turn the volume down, typo. Turn the volume down, mate. Turn your volume down a bit.
Well, we won't be able to. Oh, Christ, I'm sorry. You know, I've accused everybody else of making terrible audio and all that. Not terrible, but we're not getting feedback at this end, and we can hear, and now we can't hear.
Oh, are you still echoing?
One, two. A little bit.
Sorry, you need some headphones, mate, or, you know.
Yeah, I know that, but then I went, because the other day, you know, when I was talking to you, I did have the earbuds in.
Horrible things, aren't they?
No, it's a cheap £1 microphone, it ain't any good.
What happens is, the audio in your room playing back is then live to your live mic that you've got there. So it's the same for everyone, and therefore it just comes back through your mic.
Oh, no. Well, I kind of got it.
You could go push to talk. If you went push to talk, then only when you were talking would that happen, and then only it would be okay.
How about push to sing, Tom?
You lonesome tonight.
Elvis. You had to go and do that, yeah. Philomena loves Elvis.
Does she? I'm looking for love all the time.
Have you seen a film called Bubba Hotep?
I'll find it someday. That's the quest, mate. If you're looking for something. I reckon
we
that's
do have
a good thing.
In this country,
don't have to worry about
we?
Exactly how it all works.
The mushrooms are out though, Tom.
Yeah, looking for mushrooms is a good one as well. That's the fifth thing I'm doing.
I don't want to be overly familiar, but I have heard that you say that you deal with people who are dying on a daily basis. Caring, that kind of sense or something.
Excuse me? I mean, I'm sure we can all agree that there's people dying on a daily basis.
Yeah, but I may be mistaken, but you said you work with them in a kind of palliative care.
I haven't done at this moment in time. I worked in a palliative care ward for a year. Yeah. That's what I saw on a daily basis.
That's got to be an eye-opener and half, isn't it? Well, Philomena, a professional musician, for not long, she used to get paid, she's been looking after her parents who are like more or less on the way out, whichever way we're looking at, day in, day out. And so, you know, they ain't vixens, they do exist. And I don't know how you could do it.
Well, when I was asked to go to that ward, I had a feeling of trepidation, despite the fact I've seen a few things. I've worked in mental health for a lot of years, and I've worked with challenging adults, challenging behaviour, people would say. But, you know, I find that when you get really stuck in there, you know, you really do these things. It's not as bad, you know, as you think, and you can get used to it. And I found that on working on that ward as well. That on a daily basis, you've seen people coming in with terminal illnesses and you're making friends with people and you're hearing them having that conversation when they've got X amount of time to live. And I got cross and angry in that ward, and I was got passionate and running around and seeing these people with these shaved women with their heads. It seems so barbaric. It seems sort of old-fashioned, but... but It was profound as well, you know. And
I felt
a certain amount of positivity coming from working on there, you know, inspired by people, you know, who'd passed away. And I did. That was my overriding feeling. So that's kind of the good news about it, you know. It's a real, very
well, you were bringing up young daughters as well at the time as well, so that must have been like half a mind blower, you know, life.
All these things are.
You mentioned them, these are, you know, I'm not being nosy, it's just like, if not common knowledge, the things that stood out in the past when you've spoken. You know, you got your daughter and trying to see it through her and trying to, and then the other end of the spectrum, you got people who are like passing away and can't, you know, ever make any sense of it. And, something like that. It's, you know, I might be reading more into it than when you said it, Tom.
You know a bit about my situation, that's right. I've got 11-year-old daughter, so all my experiences, partly reflect her through her. That's right. So it's
and you
an
gotta keep...
experience. She's growing up in this world and going to school and going through the curriculum and learning the things and, you know, and, yeah.
My brother's got a child of roughly the same age, Tom. She's born in 2001, which makes her... 13 or 14. But I was amazed at was watching my brother allowing her to lap up blatant propaganda without actually chastising her or like putting her straight. Do you find yourself doing that, Tom? Like letting your daughter lap up the lunar exploration, lunar landings or something without saying, "Come on, dear, that's actually not quite true."
I think you just wash your hands of them and just hand them over. There's no point fighting for them.
Oh,
well,
there's
no point trying to, because it's going to happen, you know.
Well, I don't think fighting's the right thing to do, so I agree in a sense that there's a certain amount of sort of handing over. But when she comes home, you know, they look after her at school, you know, and they teach her. It's nourishing to an extent, you know what I mean?
Yes.
They feed her, and then, you know, otherwise what would she be doing? You know, and so... And they bring her home and they've taught her some things. And I just give her a little balanced view at home. Well, she knows what I think. And she rolls her eyes at me a little bit. But
you're the equivalent of a white blood cell.
I don't force it on her and I don't fight the school for it, you know.
How could you? You could end up like one of those sort of mad
cranks.
That's
a kind of tacit agreement. Tacitly agreeing to this happening. I don't know how else you could have it. You can't teach this, you can't do that. It seems a little bit ready. But, you know, we are tacitly agreeing to hand it over. Now, P. Shay was always...
Oh, yeah.
He always struck me as a little bit like...
A homeschooler.
No, he struck me as, like, sad about it, you know? Struck me as though his kids were...
But
as much as he wanted
sad
to,
about.
They were beyond his reach, and there's nothing he could do. And it might have been an Irish thing, you know. And one day you get them drunk and you say, look, there's this way or there's that way. And when they're old enough, they will understand. But
it's that quote, that Mark Twain quote about if you're not informed, you're uninformed, you're not disinformed, you know, whatever, blah, blah. But you need to, it's stories, isn't it? It's almost a parable to learn life by, the official story, you know, in a sense, somehow.
There's a guy I'm listening to without wishing to, you know, even suggest that anybody does it. And how he's framing it, I don't know. But I'm quite impressed by the body of work that he's done. I mean, he's almost making out he's kicking against the pricks. I mean, he's coming forward. His brother was a well-known backing into the limelight at a certain time in London at the time. Sebastian Horsley, I think he had a... Well, fuck knows what they get up to. But his name's Jason Horsley, and what was the point? The point was he's been looking into all these kind of things. He's as radicalised. He just wants to make sense of it. He's going on everybody's liminal now. We're all in a position when we ain't sure what we know. And I think it's because he's becoming middle-aged, as you would do, but he says it's all from his point of view. I think it's...
strangeness you can't account for.
Yes, well, we've all been through it. We've all been through it. But we're on this side now. Now, some people ain't going through it. They've got a different thing to go through, you know? So how long does that last? You know, if you look back
your,
as a...
How long
you're looking
your
back
echo?
As a 40-year-old man on a... son and daughter that, you know, I mean, my daughter is 30 years old, we're almost,
I don't know who she is. I thought it was just a little girl who wants a bath, really.
I've known her for 10 years.
But I ain't sure what she knows, what she doesn't know. Seems to function, you know, it's that kind of K. Philip Dick thing. How do we prove that you are not, what do you call them? Not robots, it's stupid.
Yes, I mean, it is an amazing question, really. I mean, it's all so new to me, a lot of this stuff. Where do you start? I mean, you know, I'm still thinking, you know, because it's, everything, you know, it's so big. It's fantastic, really.
But if you start at the end, people like ready to meet their maker, ready to move on. If you start at the end, see, perhaps we should work it round the other way. Perhaps we should, like, organise these things differently. We brought up with people who are dying. We always sleep with people who are older than we are. And we have to do the same in return. Without being, like, odd or peculiar or possibly eyeborn or any of that way. You know, I mean, we're not talking about Jimmy Savile. But everybody gets a fair whack, you know, a level playing field, for want of a better word. So everybody starts off more or less having the same kind of experiences. Then they get that one Eleusinian mystery or whatever you call it. And then you can either crack on or it's done your head in and you take no further part and you are put off to the margins, you know. There's plenty
natural of selections. Process we've evolved to
I can't hear a word you're saying. I don't. You must be able to understand
abilities and sensitivities that are useful for survival.
What? From the television?
Can I just say, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the finest qualities broadcast you'll likely ever hear. This is Fakeologist Radio, and we're going out to the world, as we do almost on a daily basis, it seems, at the moment.
Well, we don't
popular online environment.
Yeah,
we had a
Tapo
Era in there, there in Birmingham, with Paul in the room, and Phil Alabina. Hello, guys.
Birmingham, Alabama.
That's confusing.
Yeah, we really are.
We've got Mojo up in Aberdeen.
Well, we ain't fake
up on the windy hills of Aberdeen.
She got you. She got out to get some more buckfast, some tamazes. I hear what she said. In Mojo.
Yeah.
Oh, so, she always does it.
I think she's American.
Yes. She's American, practicing the Scottish accent. They do that quite a lot. You got to be wary of these things. Anyway, what are we going about? Bed?
Good night, guys. I'm off to bed.
We were just starting on Darwinism.
Great chatting with you all. Take care, guys. And Mojo.
Meow.
See ya.
No.
Bye, Sam.
See ya. I think I'm off to bed as well.
I bowled out of that one, Tom. Well, research. I don't think Friday night's the night to research, is it, really?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. It's like, it's 2:12 a.m. here in the UK, isn't it? So, I suppose, it is Friday evening type conversation.
It's crackerjack.
It's getting late. I've got things to do tomorrow as well. I won't be much longer on here, but nice to talk to you. Well, look, man. Okay, I'll take it back what I said about you. I was suspicious of your coming on one night. You bundled on, and
tell you what got on my nerves. Fucking Rolo got on my nerves. He accused me of interrupting people, and he can't fucking stop. He's jiggling his microphone. I'm sorry about the buzz and the echo and all that, and it might be TeamSpeak, might be Dongle. But the one day I had to call him on it, Tom, I really did. I've just heard a download. I mean, I took a special Dropbox, Lumberjack Jeff and somebody else, and, you know, some people. John Le Bon was very interesting. But Rolo, that night, I don't know what to say, I swear to Christ. But, you know, all the stuff that's like, itching at me and scratching at me. I'm not sure about any of this nonsense. And no names, no pack drill. Can't even remember the history of what's gone on. But I know it's left. And it wasn't a testimony. It was. But the other day you said it really had you running around, driving you mad, tuning in and trying to get to them, scratching and doing all that. Well, that's 14 years of our lifetime, more or less, isn't it?
You're talking about not since 9/11.
Yeah. Well, that's more or less, I suppose. I mean, I know we're making light-hearted of this.
The trip of finding out, you know, everything, you know, with, yeah, not what we're told.
When I first saw it, I thought it was Islamic terrorists, but they'd been set up to do it by powers that be, American oil interests.
Yes, that was very much a presented view, wasn't it? You say oil, but America's would be, you know, the bad guy. Look at Palestine and it's all about oil and it's, you know, but yeah, that was very much a presented view of the alternative, wasn't it, anyway?
You didn't want to go along completely with the orthodox view of it.
The punctuation.
Which was, as George Bush tells us, it was.
Yeah, you try to. I try to think. You're wise. You're clever. You go, you justify. I did anyway. I justified it in my head a bit. Do you know what I mean? To try and make myself feel better about it, rationalise it, and sort of said, well, you know, try to make it seem believable because the Americans are the bad guy, you know, or something, you know, a bit really. I think that's what we have to do. We have to find to explain these things. We have to make a bad guy or a terminal.
You did say after, and I think that's what I gathered from it, you said the initial impacts had you more or less doing what everybody was supposed to do. I was spared it in the sense that, like, I wasn't looking and it didn't detain me, and that was only because I'd inured myself to this kind of stuff quite a while.
I heard you say that.
You said it the other day, you were talking about it, and you said, no, it really got me, how could that happen to Tom, you know? Cynical Tom, kind of not seen it all before or any of that, but, you know, you kind of know. But you said you more or less took it hook, line and sinker for quite a while.
I never had a racist
bone in my body, but there was a little bit of it. You said, yeah, let's go and do them now. Which was probably the reaction. You said you...
I know I had to explain myself. I mean, I was drinking a lot of the time and was suffering from panic attacks and absorbing all this media. I can't believe I thought like that, in a sense. But yes, I'm saying on a kind of...
Some without being nosy at all, and I don't want to be, and you can be... Is it your birthday coming up, or is it just gone, or...
I'll be 48 next month.
Next month. So October, Libra.
A Scorpio, I think.
What?
Yeah, start Scorpio.
All right, then. Yeah, I'm out of date. All right, that's cool. My old man was November 7th.
He's a Scorpio, was he?
Yeah. Married a Taurian. It happens a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm looking for one, possibly. Yes. And they say, you know, the stars, what do they do? The thing is, the more we know about we don't know, you know, what and how the stars might be a lot nearer and a bit firmer and a bit safer and all a bit more secure and less random than we know, then perhaps there is something written in the stars. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It interests me, these, because I never was really an astrological kind of guy, but that's, interesting.
Well, seeing as there ain't no rocket astronauts, it ain't fucking rocket science to work out. There must be something right about it, I suppose. I don't know. Happy birthday next month. You're very intense.
I don't know what they say
about Scorpios. I don't know, they're sexy blokes.
They say that,
radio.
I mean, you know.
But you're intense.
Extraordinary in bed. They're intense, yes. They like money and they like being powerful and they're jealous and they've got a sting in their tail. Or something. I mean,
sex, death, and renewal.
Something like that. But nonsense, that is, isn't it? They have a big M with a spike on it.
In the live stream. We're just passaging it. But I've always liked them. One, water signs. And two, I get them, you know. But Roger Moore was one. Roger Moore was a Scorpio. I think he was November 7th. Give us a little bit more information. November what?
Back end of October.
That's a Libra. Don't make you Scorpio. Back end of October. You ain't Scorpio. You're right in November. Adrian is a double moon. His moon is in Scorpio.
This is a bullshit conversation. I've got the same.
It's all fake.
You know that. Yeah, I don't care. I'll just tell them a fake ologist with me, mate.
It's all fake.
And just, you've come
I don't
want to
send your birthday
you've
come card or anything. You won't tell me. Is it fake?
No, I will tell you. I've got the same birthday
Tom, it's Philomena. You know, in October, what date is your birthday in October?
It's in the same day as Simon Le Bon.
Mine's on Tuesday and I've booked the day off work. No. I don't know why.
That's not in October.
I'm not doing anything.
Next Tuesday.
September. I'm a Virgo. Yeah,
September the 20th.
I'm on the cup. I'm just at the end of Virgo, the last day. I've just fitted in.
That's Philomena. Ah, well.
There you go. A musician.
All right. Yes, my birthday's the same as Rembrandt, but a couple of years later.
Don't tell me. Years later. You're a fucking Taurus.
I'm the worst. I tell you what, if I could have my life over again, which I will, endlessly, never ending, I say that, don't I? I share exactly the same rising sign as Princess Diana and the same birthday. I'm Sagittarius rising, but I'm Cancer. But not the same birthday. Yeah, terrible, isn't it? I'm cursed.
Well, she's, she was Isis, was the, she was the special one.
You
obviously are as well, Typho.
Well, I think if you want to prove your own fate, you got to give everybody your birthday. Ain't got to tell them exactly what day it is.
I've told you. It's the 27th of October.
So that's 1967.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the unusual in this game because I've like got my actual name, haven't I, on the side?
Yes.
I'm such a mug. I just thought, well, yeah, that's my name, isn't it?
And, everybody gets it nicely confused. They call you Del Sampras.
Well, that's because I put this little super K up there. You know, it's just a little nickname. I use it for fun because everyone else has got one. So I've got one now, Del Tampa. It's Tom Delper, but it's not an anagram, is it? I put an A, but not an O. It's just a bit of play. And it sounds a bit like it's from tampering, you know. But it's not. It's tampering with my thingy, the O, by taking the O out. It's messing around. That's the explanation for that one. But my actual name is Tom Delper, yeah. So what's yours? I've told you my name's
Chris,
and my name.
Chris Lane. Chris Lane, my name is.
Really?
But because we're in the new sphere, I spell it with a K and a Z because, I don't know, I thought it might be cool.
Okay,
certainly stays wearing out the H. And there's that CH thing, I don't want to be too Christ-centric. But I was called Kit after Christopher Marlowe, Kit Marlowe, as you well know. Run through with a sword for being a spy in Shoreditch or somewhere. Oh, Ray Ben Johnson, as I used to say. Yeah, my name's Chris Lane of all that, Mum.
Chris Lane of Birmingham fame.
Yeah.
Fame.
Well,
nice to meet you. Yeah, it's fine. A lot of people wouldn't give their name straight out. But yeah, I suppose if you were asking me my birthday, yeah, it's all fair. It's all out in the open. Chris?
Oh!
Pleasure to meet you.
Tom, we'll have to keep talking about something. One of the... Mojo's I've listened to all this stuff. I mean, look, I'm half a fanboy, and I can even quote things from your past.
Well, but, the thing is, you're saying that. I'm a little bit interested. Okay, so have you read some of the stuff I've written in the forums?
Of course. I mean, at one stage, I thought,
I never know how many people are reading it. I've no idea if many people read it at all. I didn't think many did, you know, to be honest.
Style's pretty good, you know, it's concise. And without appearing to be an ingenue, I think the link was given from the Fakeologist site, so who am I not to follow it up? And lo and behold, it took me to David Icke, a man that I tried to avoid, like the plague, ever since I stole one of his books from one of the last bookshops in Birmingham. And turns out, sends you off to the David Icke Forum, and what's going on? Deep confusion. Having a go at people in here and there and knocking them backwards and forwards. And I think, well, this is DJ Wolf. You slag him, he'll slag you, and we'll do that. And notoriety ensues. But to what ends, you know, unto what purpose, I'd say. But I have been hanging, yes, I'd like to contribute in any way, shape, but I'm a fucking idiot when it comes to these things. Haven't got a clue. But all I would try and say is I'd like to treat anything as truthfully as a flat earth. Don't know, it seems like it's cut out for people who have knocked the biblical scholarship on the edge. You know, they could argue the toss all day long about how long Samson's hair was, and they eventually cut it off. But I couldn't listen to shit like that. You know, when they come out, it strikes me like any kind of fight, you know, any professional fight.
Oh, I think the issue is the questions are completely valid and very interesting, and it's just the way that the debate's been steered, I think, and some of the way it's taken, but the pseudoscience of it. I agree with, I see what you mean. It then becomes nonsense. And because you have
you were one of the first, and one of the guys said, well, look, if you do stand on Romney marshes, and it's very flat round there, wherever you said, wherever you pointed out, I think was it Romney marshes?
Well, I about a year ago or something, I tried to look at it in my very humble amateur way on a thread. I don't know if you're referring to that.
Yes, and you said, well, it seemed.
On the concave earth thread, I looked at it, and I just sort of said, well, you know, you keep looking at it, and this very basic thing of looking across the water, you know, and you start to think, oh, you know, maybe, but, yeah, that was put into my head by someone. Someone posted something in the chat here.
But then you were man enough to go, well, I have looked at it, and it does seem to me it's just a matter of perspective. And then, lo and behold, it's not a matter of perspective, lines are drawn, and which side do you stand on? And are you prepared to say, oh, but this and oh, but that? But it seems to me that this is the kind of thing that we were talking about print media as being a way, oh, psyopsican ones, or I was trying, because I'm really not up to date and tired and weary about the whole kind of crap. We know it's bollocks. We know the red tops have been bad. Do you remember when they started?
Oh, hold on, yeah. In the chat right now, talking about that subject, in the chat right now, in there right now is John Le Bon, who, you know, there he comes. Hearing he comes. Please come in and talk, John, because we're on
all
your
right,
subject.
All right, then we'll make sure I am coming, because he's...
And there's, yeah, well, exactly. See, we want to be able to hear people, Typo, so you'd have to commute your sound a bit. If you,
all right, then we'll I will you know. Do. Give us a minute.
Yeah, so John's here
yeah,
now, so he can talk.
Man. You're
going to
hang on there,
Tom. Yeah. And asked very good questions about it on his very good show. Hello, John, are you there?
How are you, Del Tempera?
Fine, thanks, mate. Nice to meet you. I haven't spoken to you before.
Yeah, never had the pleasure, so it's nice to finally get a chance. Yeah, I joined this chat probably an hour ago and I haven't had a chance to say hello yet.
Yes, I wasn't sure. I kept trying to click on your ball there, and yeah, we've all got a ball. Bring you in if I could, but Typo's been absolutely in full flow, and it's half past two in the morning here in the UK, and I think he's got a few friends around. They've had a few beers. He admitted that. He said it's Friday night. So anyway, you're very welcome, and he said so as well, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I always feel welcome. That's the way. Hey, you know what I'm doing here? I'm reading a book. This is called Life's Picture History of World War II. I borrowed this from the library. You see. And I'm just going through these photos from World War II. It's a big, heavy book. It's like A3 size, and it's just filled with thousands of photos from World War II. And I have to say, I'm not very impressed.
A Judy Wood type book, eh? Maybe a big tome.
Well, I flicked through to the V2 rocket section, right? And in a book of like 500 A3 pages, they've got one photo of a V2 rocket and two photos from the damage it did. And one of those two photos is the exact same photo from Wikipedia. Now, this is a book from 1950. This is published in 1950, 5 years after the war supposedly finished. And this entire book, they've got one photo of a V2, two photos of the damage it did, and one of those two photos is the same they use on Wikipedia. Does any of that seem suspicious to you, Del?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does. It's that's so basic. I mean, I've looked at it before, and yeah, I agree. It's the whole thing starts looking incredibly sketchy, doesn't it? It's presented reality.
And it's actually worked out well sitting here listening for the last hour, because it's given me time to go through this book. I just borrowed it recently. Anyway, get this. With one of the V2 rocket photos, it says, a V2 rocket struck an Antwerp intersection, killing many civilians. And it does. I won't even bother telling you how the photo doesn't really match that. But here's the interesting part. It says the missiles were 47 feet long. They weighed 3,000 pounds. Well, let's see what Wikipedia says about these devices today. It says that they were 27,000 pounds and 45 feet long. So we've got the book saying 3,000 pounds. Wikipedia says 27,000 pounds. And how could they make that kind of mistake?
Wow. Yeah, that's a big discrepancy.
But isn't Wikipedia just a democratic thing anyway? People can write whatever they feel like.
Oh, hello, an ounce of salt per day. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, John. How are you? Frank is my name, by the way.
Frank, I don't think we've chatted before. Nice to meet you, Frank.
Evening, Frank.
Hi, everybody. But don't you think the whole idea of
Frank, Phil.
Of Adolf Hitler coming to power in 1933.
Say that to Frank. Frank.
And then six years later, suddenly they're a world
power. Typo. I think it's you again echoing like crazy here.
Oh, sorry about that, son. Yeah, I just said hello to Frank. Sorry.
Yeah, that'll do. Mute again. Go on, Frank.
Well, I just think the whole idea that, you know, this fellow came to power in 1933 and then Germany's a complete financial wreck, and then in the space of 6 years, I mean, John, how long has it taken the national broadcast network to be built? It must have been going for 15 years already, has it?
Well, Frank, you sound like you're Australian, yes?
I live in Geelong, yeah, mate.
Oh, Geelong, fantastic. All right, yeah, bad luck. Didn't make the finals this year. You much of an AFL fan?
No, I'm not much of a professional sports fan at all.
Yeah, see, it's a shame. I heard Del speaking maybe 20 minutes ago about how once you learn about it all, it takes some of the... It's more difficult to care about sport, and I agree with him, but professional sport is the one little brain-dead outlet I allow myself. You know, I'll watch a game. My team's playing tonight. I'll go out with a mate. We'll get drunk. We'll watch the footy. It's my one little... here's the problem. I can't even watch movies anymore now. If I'm sitting there watching a movie, I can't just switch off. I'm sitting there looking for symbols, trying to work out how they're trying to program me. I can't... There's not really much that I can do that's mainstream now and switch off, whereas getting drunk and watching the footy, yeah, it's one of my few little pleasures. But anyway, yeah, so Frank, so, nice to chat with an Australian. Yeah, so the NBN, we should say for the listeners, the NBN, this is a internet for everybody, super fast internet for everybody, a complete joke. But here's the best part, Frank. Do you know what day? So we used to have a telecommunications company called Telecom. The whole country owned it. It was a national telecom provider. We privatized it. We got a couple $1 billion for it. You know, they announced that they're buying back $10 billion worth of assets that we sold for less than that, right? You know what day they announced that?
April Fool's
Day. The day of the Sydney siege. Well, well, well. What are the odds, eh?
Yeah. So unfortunately, it's a...
good day for bad news.
Well, it's just the extraordinary, the cognitive dissonance with just about everybody else you speak to, isn't it? It's quite astonishing, the ability of people to hold, at the same time, a mass of irreconcilable views.
It truly is, and I told the story on an audio chat perhaps a couple of weeks ago, that I go to a group... I'm thinking of going to one this afternoon, actually, where people just sit around and talk about a certain topic, right? You meet in the library, and every week there's a certain topic. And I was there a couple of weeks ago, and the question was, is the government too big? Or something like this, right? And so I was sitting there listening to people complain about the government, about all these problems with it, da-da-da, and then I'd say, so maybe we're better off without it. And then straight away they'd start defending the government. I'm like, you were just attacking it. And it's... It's exactly as you say, Frank. They're holding irreconcilable opinions that they will repeat one after the other.
Yeah. My favourite thing about government, though, is the we haven't got any money thing. Because the government controls the money, creates all the money it wishes to, if it chooses to.
So Frank, you clearly weren't paying attention in your economics class at university. You see, if the government prints its own money, we'll get inflation, and that would be bad. We have to borrow it from the international bonds markets. That's economic orthodoxy, Frank. Why weren't you paying attention in school?
And you'll be amazed to hear this, but, you know, I only got a C in my MBA when everything else was an HD. For that
didn't
very
MBA?
Reason. Yeah, it didn't. Hasn't everyone done an MBA?
LOL.
I thought that was everybody did one.
They do them through McDonald's now. I don't know if you ever worked in fast food, but I did. And McDonald's now, one of their sort of career progression little carrots that they dangle in front of you is if you make it to store manager and then to area manager, eventually they'll put you through an MBA. Have you heard of this?
Yeah. No, I've heard of it. And but that's true of everything, isn't it? I mean, when I finished my university course, to do teaching, it was a 6-month course to get a diploma of education. Start in March, finish in November, all done. Now you've really got to get a master's degree. So it's another 2 years of study, essentially the same course but spread over 2 years. So the amount of time spent in just building the BS into people has to increase, obviously. People must be becoming more resistant, John.
No, I'd like to think so, Frank, but I don't have much hope. Hey, I'm flicking through this book. I've just found another one. It's got a photo of Hitler and is, I guess, patting a young boy on the back. Now, it says, at Reich Chancellery in Berlin, Hitler sent German boys off to do a man's hopeless job in the gaping ranks of the Wehrmacht. And it shows these boys can't be older than, could not be older than 14, and that's being very generous. They haven't even gone through puberty yet. They've still got the face of boys. They could be 10. I'm going to say between 10 and 14. This photo is trying to suggest that these boys are being sent off to the front line. And this is a book from 1950. This is a Time magazine picture book that I had to borrow from the library. Can you guys see where I'm going with this?
Well, but yeah, the worst part about it is most likely those boys, you know, are just in Los Angeles. Now all of that stuff was recreated continuously. I mean, the war, movies about the war, books about the war, etc., total many, many hundreds of man hours more than the actual war took place.
Yep, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. And this is something I've been looking into a lot the last few weeks, is how much of World War II is legitimate. And without saying too much, I've got a few more books I need to read first, but without saying too much, I am starting to feel very, very suspicious about World War II, Frank. Very suspicious.
Well, there are many people well ahead of you on this, though, John.
Oh, yeah, well, you put me onto them, and I'll read their books.
Well, there's people like, the first book is a book called Pawns in the Game, and then there's the Lord Voldemort of this show, Ed Chiarini, Dallas Goldbug, who says the whole thing's just made up in Hollywood. Dave Johnson, who puts a whole lot of stuff out. One about the American Civil War, how most of the photographs that they show are mannequins on the field that they show as fatalities.
Well, I've written that one down, Pawns in the Game. I'm going to try and get my hands on a copy of that. And as for Dave J, and this is a question for you and for Dale and for Mojo if he's there, and Kossoff if he's there as well. Dave J, what is your honest opinion on that guy?
That he is presenting some information, but he is probably, you know, you've got to do a lot of sorting
full
the chaff from the wheat. Yeah.
Without doubt. I mean, he's an agent of disinformation. He attaches straw men to his arguments here sometimes, it seems. Definitely.
My view is
but
he's
you've
a green
then
man.
Promoted the work of Dallas Goldbug, Frank, which we know. We have this conversation before, so I don't want to get boring or get into bickering.
No, but
I totally disagree. I'm in my opinion, as you know, I think he's disinformation. It's similar to Dave J in a sense, you know. They might be at the cutting edge of sort of revealing, as we're kind of getting to the point anyway of us of finding out, most of history's how much of history are we going to rewrite? And World War II is very much, and all these wars are very much up for question. So you might well be talking a bit about that, but. Those two people you quoted, I don't think there's strong evidence at all.
One of the things I'd really like to get on top of, though, is, you know, let's say in the case of Australian politicians, one of the things that Dallas Goldbug has published just in the last day or two, which should be very easy to disprove, is that, who's the new Prime Minister? Malcolm, I can't remember his name, that's bad, isn't it? He's been around for years.
No, he's not. That's just
what's the Prime Minister, John? Malcolm Turnbull. And Dallas Goldbug is saying that character is played by Anthony Hopkins. And we should be able to disprove that.
I mean, this is just a distraction of quite an interesting conversation, the line of conversation John was getting onto. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We're now talking about Anthony Hopkins being the new Prime Minister. Exactly, Frank. I think that's daft, isn't it? It's not practical, really, I don't think.
I don't know.
Why?
Well, so my view is simply that the whole... One of the outflows of what John Le Bon has said is that all of these things are contrived, which means that the institutions that we think of as governments don't really exist. And if they don't exist, means that the whole bunch are a bunch of characters, and the characters need to be a fairly tight-knit group of people. That's why I think it's relevant, I guess. And what you need to do is unmask who the characters are, and then I guess the whole charade gets opened up, doesn't it?
Well, I think there is a certain, you know, familial, is that the right word, a family type thing going on here. We identify a kind of mafias that work within the power structure. You know, that's how power works within all sort of lots of facets of civilization, doesn't it? But I'm not, doppelgangers, these famous doppelgangers that we talked about here. That's just an absurd side issue. I mean, you've got lots of people, there are people who are, that's, sort of family is used. You know, it's like sort of, it's like a mafia. You know, we're in Italy, but we're not talking about Italians here. We're talking about an underground of sort of people who are connected, but not specific people like flipping, you know, President Carter is, who was Jimmy Carter? JFK. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, that's a fantastic, great if it was true, but you have a look, it really, really isn't practical, is it?
I
mean,
I've got no idea. I just don't think we know enough. It should be easy to disprove, but the point is,
absurd distraction.
Can I ask a question of you? Do you believe that governments exist?
Oh, yeah.
And what about you, John?
Do governments exist?
Yeah, you know, when they close the doors at Parliament House, when they've got everything, all the sittings going, or as you know, when there's some event like the massacre at Port Arthur, or there's someone get poisoned by milk, and the very next hour, 3,000 pages of legislation suddenly appear on the table and get voted upon. You know, do you think any of that is real?
Is this a serious question?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a serious question.
Frank, are you trying to suggest? If you mean by your question what I think you mean, then it's so absurd, I'm not even sure how to respond to it. There are people, there are people with names who we call politicians,
yeah,
who convene 150 of them in Parliament, and it's all a circus for sure. But are you suggesting that these people don't even exist?
As their names, as their bodies, do I think any of it exists? Do I think any of government exists is my question. They all go there.
How real is government? Okay, yeah, they all go there. They all think they're doing a job, just like the rest of it, how everything else works, how all the teachers work, how all the politicians work, how all the other people in business work and everything. They're going there within a rigged game, playing a rigged game every day. They're going there doing it, and it is effectively, doesn't matter who's in office, because it is laid out for them. They're reading to script a lot of the time, but they're doing it, aren't they, each day? They're not doppelganging somewhere else around the rest of the world, pretending they're President Putin, and then coming back and being, you know, Michael Farage on a Tuesday. Nonsense.
How do you know that?
It was a joke. All right. Okay.
All right. I'm not quite sure what it is that it doesn't sound like we're actually debating anything, because, you know, there doesn't appear to be any way that a politician can make any changes that he wants to change, or it doesn't appear any way that you, for example, John, become a member of Parliament or the Prime Minister and enact any effective change that I can see.
Yeah, I'm really not sure I can respond to. I'm really not sure what point you're trying to make, to be honest.
Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is mechanism that we see that we call government, right, the way that we are told that the world works, is obviously not the way the world works.
Yep.
In summary.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Okay, so that ergo implies that there is no government as we see it, as we're told it occurs.
No, I don't think. Okay, so politics, really, I mean, we've just had a change of Prime Minister, right? Is that going to make a difference to anything? Obviously not. Okay.
Actually, it will make a difference. It'll now what will happen is that the carbon tax will come back in.
Yeah, I agree with you. The carbon tax will come back in. I'm with you on that. But that was going to happen anyway. I mean, like, so they can put in this puppet or that puppet, and it's all just puppetry, and the vast majority of the masses either go along with it or they don't care. But either way, this is all just a circus to add legitimacy to what they're doing. So I think we'd all agree with that. But when you playing Malcolm Turnbull, I mean...
So then before you go on, right, if we agree that Malcolm Turnbull is fulfilling a character's role, right, then we have to ask, is Malcolm Turnbull the person we think he is? Is he prepared as a person to behave at the behest of another person? Does that seem reasonable? If he is, a character like you and I that's growing up.
But I'm a bit bamboozled by you, Frank. What you're talking about? I mean,
well, the point is what John has just said is he acknowledges that Malcolm Turnbull is going to perform the function or the task that's set for him by some other agenda.
Let's talk in other terms about that then. Let's talk about that in other terms so I can understand it a bit better. How I see it is he'll go in there and he'll be doing a job within a system that's already set up, a political system, won't he? Like I'm saying, people do things in all sorts of avenues of life and civilization, you know, in the workplace, in the business world and everything. He will go in and he'll be kind of playing to rules within another game within that. That's how I see it. So how do you see it? He's got a serves of role. He's a front man sort of pressing buttons here and there. You know,
okay, so my question is, how many self-respecting men would do that in that circumstance? And I throw the question open.
Well, I think, as we know, there's plenty of people, they're born into it, you know, and they aspire to it very often. We're born into a system and we aspire to achieving that within that system. But as we know, the whole game is rigged.
And what's your view, John? Do you think that Malcolm Turnbull was born into that system and...
I obviously don't know, but I would imagine that Malcolm Turnbull actually did work for Merrill Lynch or whichever investment bank he is alleged to have worked for. Yeah. He actually does live in Wentworth or whatever suburb it is that he's meant to live in. And I mean, I don't see why they would have to go to the extent of completely fictionalising the entire Parliament of Australia when they could easily just co-opt them or influence them or have them involved in secret societies or simply make them aware through osmosis that there are certain things they can and can't do. I mean, if you're suggesting that these people are actually completely fictionalized, I would say to you, one, why would they have to do that? And B, what's your evidence that they're doing that?
What's my evidence that they're doing it?
Do you think that Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins?
I think it's possible that they're the same person, yeah.
Yeah, well, anything's possible, Frank. It's possible that, you know, Dudley Moore is Usain Bolt, as I always use as an example.
Yeah, you always use that example.
He could have had plastic surgery, mate. He could have been Vic Simmed, and they've elongated his body. You know, it's absurd. You don't know, though, do you? It's the ears, Frank. It's the ears. You can tell it in the ears. It's absurd, Frank. It's as absurd as that.
Don't think is reasonable is that real people would go to Parliament and we'd end up with the results that we are ending up with.
Well, I think, that's almost a reasonable question. But I think my answer would be I can very easily understand how people could be doing and answering the questions and doing what they do in Parliament, doing their job.
Have you ever met a student politician, Frank?
I was one.
So you would have mixed with people who will say and do whatever they have to say and do to rise up the ladder then, surely?
For a short time, but none of them got through to the top.
Why? Because the people who got through to the top were better at saying or doing what they had to say or do.
I don't know, because I don't know any of the people at the top now. I've had no life experience. I've never met them. At one stage I met, say, John Brumby, who was a member of, who was a Victorian Premier for a while, and he behaved very strangely at the time I met him when he was privatising the ports of Geelong. That was a very weird change.
It seems to me, where I'm going with this, Frank, is it seems to me that the entire system is set up to self-select the most, and I don't like using these kinds of terms because I think all of psychology and psychiatry is a sham, but I'll just use this term for now because people understand it, sociopathic. The whole system is set up to be self-selecting of the most sociopathic people. So take the Australian example. There are two major parties, the Labor Party and the Liberal Party, right? So Young Labor is full of these people who, you know, maybe at first truly believe that Labor are good, but within a couple of years of being involved in Young Labor, the only ones who are left are, it's all a big game to them. And so the ones who are really good, they'll get a job working as a staffer for a Labor politician, and then if they kiss enough ass for 10 or 15 years, maybe they'll get pre-selected. And all along, it's like a little pyramid. All along, people are going, oh, this is a waste of my time, and they're dropping out. But the people who are staying in, who end up making it to pre-selection, they've kissed so much ass that they've been in the game for so long. It's all they know. Where it doesn't matter anymore, like what's right or wrong, because what's right or wrong is what either gets them further up the chain or what gets them, you know, what halts their career. So the whole system is set up that by the time people make it to Parliament, I mean, we've got 150 members of Parliament, and I'm pretty sure all bar a couple are Labour, Liberal, or the Greens, or the Nationals, all the same big party nonsense, right? By the time they've made it there, the whole system is self-selected. People who are so sociopathic, of course they will say or do or vote one way or vote another way. Of course they will. Why would you have to fictionalize these people? You can just set up a system that self-selects people who aren't like you or me. These people don't. There's no morality in these people. They're robots. But I don't mean that they're literal robots. I mean they're just. Why wouldn't they behave the way they behave? Of course they would. I mean,
What's the motivation of people behaving like this?
What's the motivation of anyone behaving the way that they do? The point that I'm making here is, with the political system, there's only a very small percentage of people who will ever get involved in Young Labour or Young Liberal. So, and already you've kind of screened out your sensible, moralistic people, right? And then within that group, the only ones who make it to the top are going to be the least, and I'm just using the word moral here, you know, in a general sense, that the least, use whatever word you want, whether it's integrity or morals or ethical or whatever. The only people who are going to make it to the top are a tiny fragment of the population who aren't at all representative of the rest of us, if that makes sense. Like, why would they have to fictionalize it?
So what's your view of who the they is that set up the system?
Well, that's a good question. That's a whole other topic. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's...
You've switched topics now, Frank.
I'm not switching topics.
I'll bring it back to the point. We're saying that there is a system that self-selects, right? But someone has to be maintaining the system, some group, some entity. That group, by implication of what John's saying, is the real controllers, yeah?
Have you read the book Propaganda by Edward Bernays?
Here they come. There come, the real controllers.
Yeah.
They're coming.
I have read that typo. Book, yeah.
Sorry about that. Echo cancellation seems it's working.
Yeah, I've read
that
book.
Yeah, so Edward Bernays in the book Propaganda, which was written, I think. Sorry, mate. I thought you could hear me. I'm not getting any feedback here. I heard a buzz. Sorry, John.
Typo, please, can you either mute or not be shouting? Because there's loads of...
I didn't realise it was Shane. How's this?
It's all right, mate. It's all right. Okay, John and Frank were speaking.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in the book Propaganda by Edward Bernays, which was written, I think, in the 1920s, he openly states that, you know, the politics is a circus and other people run the show. I mean, this is... Where's that echo?
Typo, mute your mic.
All right, I'm going to knock it on the head. I thought it was all right. I got echo reduction, echo cancellation. Sorry about that, chaps.
All right, darling. Off he goes. Right, now, please, yeah, we love you. Carry on.
Yeah, but I don't pretend to know who really runs a show. No way. I'd love to meet someone who does believe they know, because I'd like to pick their brain. But I don't know. I don't know who runs a show. I've got no idea.
Yeah.
Okay, you're acknowledging then that government, as we talk about it, is non-existent.
There's an organised power structure, shadow government. That's what we kind of see, don't we? Isn't that what we're identifying? Because we can identify it sort of comes from military intelligence, some of this stuff, but it's kind of like shadow of a military intelligence. And so everything, yeah, it's kind of like a shadow government, which isn't out in the open because they don't want to be, you know, they're not the names necessarily we know as the famous ones, I wouldn't have thought necessarily. And it's just like that, and it just works like that.
Okay, so now I come to the reason why I think people like Dallas Goldbach have credibility, at least in their ideas, even if the names that they're naming are disinforming people. The simple point is, what John is saying is that system is so clever that it self-selects narcissists and power-mad people and so on that eventually get trapped in a system and do what they're told. I guess I don't share that view of John's, that people exist like that unless they're paid actors. And that's really the simple nuts and bolts of it. Some of these people are obviously coming from overseas.
I can't. I'm going to jump in there. Excuse me, Frank, for butting in. But no problem. I don't think that makes much sense at all right from the outset that they're paid actors. I mean, I think some of us know, have met people in politicians and people in politics and get a sense of of them, and they're just very much in a weird world of politics that they've got into, and they're, like John was explaining, I think there are talented people within it and good and well-meaning people who do. They can become stars within it, but often they're just complete dupes. And because the system is so warped that by being a great dupe and a real genuine sort of people with a good, highly person, you can do all right in politics, but you'll just be a promoter of, say, nuclear weapons for years you could be a politician, you get a good reputation for being against nuclear weapons, and you're promoting them, aren't you, really? Although your intentions were all very good, but all of those people were great promoters of nuclear. And they, you know, the one I'm saying is that isn't a paid actor at all. That was perhaps the leader of a party, but he was just complete dupe.
Yeah, that's all.
We've seen loads of them, haven't we? That's how they work, don't they?
I think in simple...
They don't work by being fucking paid actors who go, oh, I'm fucking junkies over to Russia to do another thing for 6 months. I mean, it's an absurd Scooby-Doo type thing. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is clearly...
Right, that I disagree with you, that's all. I mean, I'm pointing out the reasons why I think it's plausible. It's plausible because, if we identify it, I'll just go over the logic one more time. Clearly, we all agree that governments and legislation don't work the way they're portrayed on the West Wing or on, you know, the sittings of the Houses of Parliament. Clearly, legislation turns up in these Houses of Parliament, which has been written long before the events that we're told about take place. Legislation is already in place and can be voted on within minutes of a Port Arthur massacre or a building falling down or whatever. So the whole, and then you've got to then make the next step that the people living in those parliaments and operating those parliaments, as portrayed, are all so caught up in their psychopathy that they're prepared to go along with that. And I think it's a pretty risky way to operate, as opposed to, as they said in 9/11. Rather than have some parts of it where you're relying on people, why not make the whole thing a fraud? You know, all of 9/11 was a fraud.
There's systems in place which make it can run smoothly with it being completely compartmentalised effectively. And so things can be done. You can make motions at certain times of Parliament. Not everyone has to be on the know at a certain time for a certain vote at a certain time. It's going on all the time, in all detail, all over the place. Things are being planned, looked after, little votes here, go through here, there and everywhere. It's how the mechanism works. People get paid for it. You know, they make decisions. The money coming in is, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay.
It's 3 a.m. in the morning.
I'm more sceptical than you are, obviously, about that.
3 a.m. in the afternoon would be good, wouldn't it? Well, it's sceptical. Sceptical. No, we're trying to be real here, Frank. What we like is real stuff. We're interested in what's really going on there. We like reality. That's what we're interested in. And I think your line here is, we've got sidetracked on it really, but it's an interesting conversation. We can talk about these things by way of Dallas Goldbug, but I really don't, I challenge that as its credibility as genuine research. And he looks like it looks like straw men attached to everything he talks about. And he does talk some sense and it sounds intelligent. I used to occasionally like listening to. And, there's some reality in there, but I won't have it kind of thing in a way, because I think I have to call it absurd every time.
Yeah, no problems.
I think it's a tactic of disinformation. I think it's quite compelling as well at the same time, though. I think people can fall into these kind of celebrity likenesses. When you look at faces, they can kind of morph together. And it is quite compelling, and I think that's why it's used in a way. I've fallen for it. I've fallen for these things. And I have to be open to the idea that perhaps you have, it is something that I could have fallen for as well, and you've fallen for it, Frank, and I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I just think of them as models.
No, I think it's absurd. I think it doesn't make sense at all. They are, you can think of them hypothetically as that, imagine in an analogy, really. And they are like that, effectively, just puppets, as we call them. But no, that's a distraction. I think that really is a distraction. I think the conversation about how real is war was better, was more interesting and more sort of, we get on the V2 rockets there and stuff. And, that was just a silly conversation, really. I don't know what we got out of that.
Well, yeah, I was talking about this book that I'm reading, which looks very fake to me. And then Frank says, oh, well, that's, everyone already knows that it was fake. Let's talk about, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia being played by Anthony Hopkins. I mean, Frankie, be honest here. On a scale of 0, meaning you think it's completely not the case, to 100, meaning it completely is the case, how confident are you that Anthony Hopkins is Malcolm Turnbull? Like, is it 5%? You're 5% confident or 20%? Like, what?
So all of these things, John, is I don't worry about trying to believe or not believe, right? All I have is someone's made a put forward a model, if you like. They put forward a view, yeah? So it should be very easy, very simple, because it's so absurd, for us to disprove this model, shouldn't it?
Okay, so do you reckon you could answer the question, Frank? I'm personally at 0.01%. I think it's 0.01% likely that Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins. Is it possible? Sure, but it's highly, highly, highly improbable. Like saying 0.01%, that's being very, very generous. It's probably many orders of magnitude less than that. You bring it up as if it's actually potentially real. What percentage? Are you saying it's 2% likely? 5%?
I don't see the point in trying to...
1.5%.
I don't think there's any point at all in trying to speculate without any. All I've seen is a picture, right, which says this guy's put these two faces together, and you think, okay, I understand what he's saying. Is it real? How do I know?
And why even bring it up? If you think it's not likely, why even bring it up? Like in a serious conversation, why even bring that possibility up unless you think it's like genuinely...
Because what I've just been speaking about is that the idea that governments operate the way we talk about needs to have some explanation of the behaviour of the people in it. And you're not offering any explanation of the behaviour of the people in it. So we discard an explanation simply because you think it's ridiculous.
Actually, I did bring up an explanation. I laid out a pretty compelling case, I think, about how it's a self-selective system. Anybody who's ever met a young Labor or young Liberal student politician can see just how it attracts those kinds of people. So I have actually presented an explanation. Your explanation that Malcolm Turnbull is Anthony Hopkins is utterly ridiculous. And I say to you, all right, then, give me a percentage of how confident you are, and you refuse to answer it because you know it's ridiculous. Like, what are you trying to do here, Frank? Make us all look stupid.
I'm trying to do anything.
Why would you even bring that up, though? I'm sitting here wondering, what could motivate you to even bring that up, Anthony Hopkins as Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of this country played by Anthony Hopkins? What could possess you to do that?
Okay, did I not say straightforwardly to you that I don't accept your model that genuine people end up behaving the way that our governments are behaving?
That's fine if you don't accept it, but right? why would you bring up...
So what I said was there is a model out there that the guys that we see as the top, as the figureheads, are not genuine people. Now, how can
I
be more
fine? It doesn't follow from that they're played by Hollywood actors.
Now, that's the point. So this is where I get to every time in this conversation with guys like you and so on. Fine, it should be really easy for you to disprove the guy, shouldn't it?
Anthony Hopkins is Malcolm Turnbull.
It should be an absolute soda to disprove that.
Yes, well, it's one of those scientific questions where you could never – well, it's difficult from our position in one bloke sitting in front of a computer one side of the earth to compute, definitely confirm it. But, it's one that you can make an assessment on which you can be very, very sure that it isn't. And there are ways of doing it. You said one the other night, and I compared two guys in a photograph. They're completely different heights. It's completely impractical. And as John said, 0.01% is generous. Yes, I'd agree. To that kind of level of scientific assessment, I could come to that conclusion. So you can never prove it 100%, but you can pretty much say that. So what are you talking about? It's bullshit. You can't. Anthony Hopkins couldn't. There's no way that guy, you know, he couldn't. It's totally impossible. Totally impractical, no reason for doing it, and I don't know why you're saying it, why you're suggesting it, and why you continue to push it as an idea. If it's conceptual, if it's conceptual, get somewhere with the conceptual idea of this. Where are we going with it?
I have said 15 times, or 30 times now, it must be, that we've acknowledged that governments don't function the way they do, and really John Le Bon's model is that the system self-selects for psychopathic people. That's John Le Bon's model. Do you agree, John, that's your model?
Well, I'm saying they're not even psychopathic half the time. As I said, you could get some good-hearted person who's a complete dupe. They've just fallen for all the official line. They do what they're told. They believe the narrative. They're not like us. They haven't found these things out, you know. They don't realise. They've gone, and they're trying to do the right thing a lot of the time. Not all these people are kind of psychopaths. You get someone like David Cameron, the kind of Prime Minister of England. He's been born into a family of politicians. He's come through a schooling system which has been in place for centuries, which is grooming their men to behave in a certain way. He's born very much into a system. You can't blame him. He's just there. He's just how he is. David Cameron is like that. He's groomed for it through the society, from the old institution, through schooling. you know, it's not an actor. So and that's why it works, because it's completely convincing. He's a real guy there doing it, passionately doing his job in a bizarre way, you know. He's a puppet, but not Anthony Hopkins or whoever he's supposed to be. David Icke is, you know, Cyril Smith or something.
But that's the reason why I've raised it, John. It's as simple as that. You have a particular view of what's happening. I have a different view, and I'm looking for an explanation of it.
Yeah, but you haven't explained what your different view is, unless we're meant to infer that you actually believe that the politicians that we see on the ABC in Parliament and who go out every 3 years into communities kissing babies, unless you're trying to suggest that they're actually paid actors playing a role under a different name, fully aware that they don't vote on anything. So someone like me says, oh, they vote. They just vote how they're told to vote. You seem to be suggesting, no, they don't even vote. They're just actors. And, like, is that where you're going with all of this?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, move the discussion on. I there's not much more I can say on it. It's just, I'm just pretty certain that this thing is pretty well controlled.
Yeah, we're all agreeing that it's controlled, but you're suggesting that these people are literally actors.
Well, I'm saying that here is the analogy that I'm making. Your view is that, see, the problem with having real people make real decisions is every now and then, because they might have a conscience or because it doesn't suit them, they might not do the right thing. So my analogy is to the 9/11 building thing. Why would you have real planes? Why would you have real things happening? Why would you have real deaths, etc.? We've all come to the conclusion that the entire thing, like, I'm just extending that way of thinking to Parliament.
Well, I don't think the entire thing of 9/11 was fake at all. That's why we talk about it, because it's real in a sense, isn't it? And that's what we're saying about Parliament. It is real in a sense.
There were some buildings at 9/11 that needed demolishing, so they demolished them. That's true.
Right then, I know that it's late for you, Del, so sorry if this is keeping you up. But okay, here's one for you then, Frank. All right then, Pauline Hanson. Okay, yeah. She was a politician in Australia, very popular. She ran on a largely nationalistic platform.
I think
she was imprisoned.
Genuine.
Do you think she was paid as an actress from the start?
No, I think she's genuine. I could be wrong.
But so you're saying that there are real people in Parliament then?
There are some real people in Parliament, yep.
And how do they get there if it's all just a stage show, if it's all paid actors? How do the real people get there if it's all fake?
Through the fake processes. But I mean, what was the effectiveness of Pauline Hanson in Parliament?
Again, some of your questions, I don't even understand the point of them. So let's go back to your point, though, that it's all just a stage show, it's all acting, right? That's your model. Okay, then, how the hell does a real person make it in? If it's all an act, how does a real person get on the set?
How does a real person get on the set?
If it's all an act, if the audience is all just watching a play, how the hell does a genuine person stumble into the theatre, onto the stage? If it's all just an act, how does the real person end up in the middle of the act on the stage?
That's a good question. So either that can happen, or I'm wrong about Pauline Hanson.
It seems to me far more likely that they would have the system set up in such a way that the vast majority of people who even get pre-selected, let alone actually get elected to Parliament, are already so invested in the system, not just psychologically, but in terms of their life, in terms of people. I mean, even student politics, there's so much, you know, sex and debauchery and all this kind of stuff. Everyone's got so much gossip on each other and everything that anyone who steps out of line will be slaughtered by their own party before, you know, anyone else has to do anything to them. I don't mean slaughtered literally. I just mean everyone has so much dirt on them. And that's without even looking at how intelligence agencies will have so much dirt on these people. I mean, I'm convinced that the Greens, for instance, are 100% controlled by the CIA. You know what I mean? Like, they have so much information. I mean, do they care about you and me? No, they don't. But if we actually got into Parliament, then all of a sudden, it'd be very easy for them to track everything we do, know everything about us. And everybody, you know, everybody has some kind of skeleton in the closet. Or if they don't, someone in their family does. And if nobody in their family does, it's not hard to create one. So by the time you make it to that level, then they can make sure that you stay in line. And it wouldn't be hard for them to do it, even if they have to do it subtly, to make it clear to you, listen, don't you say anything too out of orthodoxy. Don't even try and suggest for a moment that you wouldn't borrow money from international bond markets. You know, don't you dare suggest for a moment that the government, you know, the size of government should be drastically reduced, or that we should, you know, get rid of this Prussian education system. Like, don't do anything too outrageous and you'll be okay. But if you do start getting too out of line, well, things can happen to you. And then when someone like Pauline Hanson comes along and she has all of this support because she's trotting out a nationalistic line when we live in, you know, the opposite of that. So she gets popular support. Well, within a few years, they just get her imprisoned on trumped up electoral fraud charges, and away she goes. And it almost serves as an example to the rest of us. If you do dare to actually appeal to the masses, then we'll find a way to imprison you as well. And so it's all real in the sense that you can make it there, but by the time you do, they need to make it clear to you not to step out of line. And if you do step out of line, you end up in prison or worse.
So let me go and think. So Charles Manson, you know, just take an easy example. You believe he's a real creature and that he's in jail?
I have never looked into Charles Manson, so I can't answer.
Okay, so I'm going to put to you that Charles Manson is totally a fiction. The character of Charles Manson is a fiction, and that he's not in jail, and if we go and try and find him, he won't be there. So we don't know anything. You and I don't know anything about Pauline Hanson, so she could be a character. Now, the next part I would say to me is very clear, John. To me, the idea that you are going to use blackmail and, you know, pictures of them sleeping with pigs as a way of controlling outcomes is going to be nowhere near as effective as just having the person just be part of the club or be one of the family members.
Anyway, I was just looking at just going back to that speaking about the V2 rocket. I just thought it's really interesting how that was at the end of the Second World War. Rocket technology was kind of brought in as like this kind of spooky, looming danger. You know, this phantom was brought in. So in the theatre of war, and at that moment in time when everyone was impressionable, they brought in this big spooky thing, rockets. You know, these new rockets, these V2. The V,
with Wernher von Braun.
Yeah, well, he was one part of
that. Went to work for Disneyland.
They're the fathers of rocketry, modern rocketry, like Hermann Oberth and these boys, you know, over there who went on to work for places like Convair Corporation as technical consultants and stuff for the Atlas rocket program and stuff. So they were, but this was the birth of it. It was in the war. It was interesting because John was talking about the V2 stuff. He was just looking at it and, yeah, that was an interesting time. So I just thought how you could see how rockets were then after the World War II and these V2 rockets, these kind of spooky top technology. They even got the guy who fucking invented it to go and front it, the new rocket program. He ended up fronting it on Walt Disney in the States. You know, it's just an amazing fact, isn't it, really? But
the guy that ran Paramount Studios.
And then okay, so, and then, yeah, so that it was all, you can see how controlled this whole thing was, this play, in a sense, that they thought, yeah, we'll make this a fan, and then with after the war, you can then, it became the rockets that would take us to the moon, you know, out the stratosphere, you know, it went out of the stratosphere, then the bullshit, you know, you can actually attach people to them, and then, I mean, it's absurd, really, when you look at it, that you can actually travel on these rockets, but yeah, the same guys, yeah. It's extraordinary, looking at the history.
It is absurd, though. It is absurd, mate. And I have a friend who is very well educated at university, and he's studying science and all the rest of it. And he's a smart guy. Like, he's a pleasant guy, and he does have the capacity to think critically. But I said to him, you know, they claim that they can send rockets to comets now, or asteroids, or whatever. Like not only can they land a rocket on a asteroid, they actually claim that they have done that. And he's like, "Yep." And I'm like,
"And now
thousands of kilometers an hour, you actually think they could land a human made object onto a comet traveling at thousands of kilometers an hour?" And he's like, "Yep." And I'm like, "What? How difficult must it be?" At those kinds of speeds, and you know what his explanation to me was, Dale? He's like, yeah, but at those kinds of speeds, it all becomes relative, and he went off onto this explanation of how it's actually not that difficult if you think of it. I'm sitting here thinking.
But you could justify it. You could just say, well, relative, you see, if you're going at 70,000 miles an hour and there, you know, or something, you know, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, they don't go anywhere, do they, rockets? I think they probably just go up a little way, go off in a curve, and then they just ditch somewhere, don't they? Is that out of sight, and then they just ditch?
I remember as a child asking, why the hell do the rockets end up going sideways? Do you know what I mean? Like, why do they go up and then curve like that? Well, of course they do, because they're landing in the ocean. All of these landing points, all of these launch pads, they're all near big bodies of water. Now, why might that be? up it goes, down it comes into the water, clean it up, and no one's ever the wiser. And then, how many of these rocket launches are even happening in the first place? Do you know what I mean? Like, you look at some of the footage of the rockets being launched, and I don't think there's even, I think oftentimes, there's not even a rocket going up. It is all completely stage show. Do you know what I mean? Like, how many rockets are actually being launched and dumped into the sea? I don't even think it's that many. I think, for the most part, there are no rockets being sent up in the first place.
Yeah.
So you don't believe that Chinese people walked on the moon, John?
Or their rover. I mean, that's a good thing, Frank, is you can say to people, have you heard about the Chinese space program? And most people haven't. And you can show them footage, and people are far more skeptical of the Chinese government than they are of their own. So you can
see
the
Chinese moonwalk. The moon looks different to it does in our one.
I went to dinner with a Chinese woman not so long ago. She is about just under 40, very well educated, master's degree. She's a Chinese woman. She completely believes, totally and utterly, that Chinese people have walked on the moon recently.
That lie works again for the new sort of big continent getting westernized. You give them a good boost with the space program, you know, and all their cities, so much building and prosperity, sort of like
the same the story,
free,
run again,
free market.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, did it happen to, you know, Japan or whatever? And yeah, that's how it's sold with the space program attached.
Well, I need to get going in a moment, boys, but just quickly, let me throw one out to both of you. Do you actually believe there's more than a billion people in China?
No, I don't. And in fact, Jungle Surfer did a very quick thing that you can do very quickly. You just use Google Earth, do a house count, do a rough estimate of how many people are in those houses, and you can't get anywhere near the figures. So the population of the Earth is clearly much lower than we're told.
What about you, Del?
I think that's probably very true. I think you're probably spot on with that, with questioning that. The whole planet, the whole size of the continents, the amount of people, everything totally up for question and reshaping, I think, for sure. Yeah.
To give you an idea of just how statist we are, and you guys already know, but to me, this is something that really brings it home to me. When I was a child, I was taught that it was a good thing that the Chinese government limited their people to one child because there were too many of them and the earth couldn't handle it. I was taught that that was a good thing. Now, to me, whether you believe in what they call God or you don't or whatever, it seems to me pretty obvious that one of the most amazing things a human can do is to create another human. That seems to me to be about as amazing as it gets, really, to me, personally. The idea that you would let the government, whatever that government is, okay, the idea that you would let another group of people limit you to how many humans you can create, that's about, to me, as evil as it gets, just using that word in the general sense. But I was trained that that was a good thing. I was taught that. It's a good thing that China did that. Now, what kind of message does that send to a child? Like, I don't know if you guys get where I'm going with this, but the point of this is it was all based on the notion that China had that many people. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean I'm not articulating myself.
Yeah,
well,
I can see.
You're articulating yourself perfectly. John, the whole point is that everything about this is anti-human. Everything about the way that this goes is to scare people into believing humans are nasty, go about committing mass murder, creating nuclear weapons and so on, none of which turns out to be true. You know, it simply wasn't true that airmen dropped horrific weapons upon Nagasaki and Hiroshima. It wasn't true. It isn't true that there are men going around committing massacres in schools. And it isn't true that there are too many of us on the planet. In fact, if you do a quick sum, even if you assume that there are 7 billion people, if you had a house like mine, 4-bedroom with 7 people in it and 1,000 square metres of land, even at 7 billion, the entire population of the world could be in a city the size of Texas. And if you imagine that broken up into 100,000 cities, you wouldn't even see 7 billion people on the planet.
Good point. It's a presented reality. The only reason
we take up so much space is because we build buildings that we only occupy for a couple of hours a week, and then we have to have cars to get to them, and we build roads, and the whole exercise is one of futility. It's a crazy system.
The spectre of China is boosted by that idea that there was a massive amount of population there, and then, it's just a presented reality in the world view. Countries have talked about in the sort of first person, almost. They're like, the Greece did that, China did that, and we have this kind of presented view in the West or wherever our media gets through to filters through to us of what China is. And absolutely, you're probably absolutely right. You know, just like a lot of other things, it's there to be. That figure is definitely up for question. Presented worldview.
Well, John, can I ask you some really basic questions?
I do have to get going soon, but yeah, you can really quickly ask me some questions. Yep.
Do you think it's sensible that we collect all of our shit and dump it out in the ocean rather than putting it back on the land?
Now that you ask me, now that I think about it, of course it's not, now that I think about it.
So one of the really absurd things is that, as I said, we go to a huge amount of effort to put all this pipework in. We very carefully collect this shit, which has got all the phosphorus and nutrients that we're supposed to be running out of as a human thing, and we need to have all these fertilizers. But we get everything, we collect everything, carefully put it in one place, and then carefully dump it out to sea. The second thing I don't understand is, why, if we want to save energy and power, why don't we turn the lights out at 11 o'clock at night? Save about 25% of the carbon emissions that we would have.
I think we can all agree that the notion that we have energy scarcity is ridiculous. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah.
You know what blows me away is this. You know what blows me away is the story of how they got the term fossil fuels. When I was a child at school, we were taught that we were running out of fossil fuels, fuel that came from dead dinosaurs. Right? That's what we were taught. I'm telling you, I remember being taught this crap.
No, they haven't changed the story. That's the problem, John. The story is still the same, and the fossils exist
at 20,000 feet. Myth, something.
And now the fossil oil comes from 20,000 feet underground. How did the fossils get there? Is what you're coming to assume, is it?
Yep, yep.
And you wouldn't mind, but the abiotic oil theory was only put forward by the most preeminent chemist in the world, the guy that put the periodic table together, Mendeleev. Incredible.
So, do you think the petrol from the ground is self-replenishing?
It's clearly done the way that Mendeleev said it was, that limestone and stuff occurs, and water are brought together and that there's a reaction that occurs that creates the oil, yeah.
It wasn't long ago. I would have thought that was crazy, whereas now I'm thinking to myself, that could easily be the case. Wouldn't surprise me.
But like I said, the guy that put it together was only the guy that put together the periodic table. So he's really smart for everything except that stuff, apparently.
Yeah, so you could say there's a real bit of real science there, the periodic table, because there are things you can put together that do work, some of it anyway. And you can also say that...
But anyway, clearly the facts of oil production don't fit the fossil fuel theory. There must be something happening. And we know that the wells in the USA are now replenishing anyway.
Even the periodic table, though, you look at it. I remember when I took chemistry in high school, and I remember thinking to myself, how can we have elements that are known as californium and einsteinium? And it just, I remember thinking to myself, this seems a little bit silly, but I just went along with it. Now I'm sitting here thinking, the periodic table, hey, and I'm digging into Bohr's model and, well, you know, what we're taught about, like what I was taught about, what we know about the chemicals and how they work. And I'm at the stage now where I'm thinking to myself, how could I have ever believed that we know what an atom looks like? How could I have ever believed this crap? But I did. So much of what we're taught, even in science, so much of it, if you take a step back, it's like, Jesus, this is worse than religion. At least they just make silly claims about what some guy did 2,000 years ago. These people are telling us nonsense about today.
Yeah, and it goes on. I mean, the best guy on this topic has got to be Chris Kendall. I mean, he's got this thing completely nailed, hasn't he?
Well, I have to confess, I haven't really listened to much. I know that Ab posted, or that's one podcast that I've been meaning to try and get into. I just haven't got around to getting into them yet. But I'll take your word for it.
Chris is just sensational on the stupidity of science. You know, but you're right.
I definitely need to listen to him. But hey, guys, I'm really sorry. I've got to get going. And I should say, Frank, I apologize, man. I didn't mean to come across wrong way before. We probably have way more in common than we have out of common. So it was foolish of me to focus on something we disagreed on. I should have moved the topic.
Don't be silly. Here is if you want to find out about the craziness of the way I think. Here is my website.
Yeah, I mean, all fair and in love and war and all that. I don't know why I said that, but yeah, nice to talk to you, John, and meet you. Good work, mate. I've really enjoyed some of your shows and listened to a lot of you speaking and enjoyed your programs a lot. Thanks for the stuff you've done.
Oh, thank you, Del. I appreciate that, mate. I do read a lot of the comments on Psychologist. I've actually subscribed. I'm pretty sure it's you. I've subscribed to your YouTube channel based on what I've read from you in the. I think it was Cavendish. You ended up posting a lot of stuff underneath that thread that Ab posted about Cavendish. That was you, wasn't it? Have I got that right?
I did post a couple of comments there. Yeah, nice little picture there of Cavendish's balls.
Yeah, man. Don't worry. I've been following your work as well. I appreciate it. And yeah, man. Like the Fakeologist website. There's some people here who I just don't understand. But then there's other people where I feel like they're actually doing research, and it's frustrating on YouTube. There's, you know, I can do a show that gets a couple thousand viewers, but then I know for a fact the vast majority of them aren't actually doing any of their own research. Do you know what I mean? And I never got into any of this to be anybody's entertainer. But sadly, that's what my YouTube channel has become for a lot of people. It's just entertainment. And at least with Fakeologist, when Ab posts something, people will post below him their own research. And, you know, that means a lot to me that people, like, put it this way. When Ab posted that and then you and other people were clearly doing your own research and posting below it, I was like, that's what I got into all of this for, was to collaborate with people. Like, somebody puts an idea out there and then others go and see what they can find. And that's where I think Fakeologist is more useful than YouTube, because on YouTube, man, the vast majority of people, they've got no interest in doing research, which just staggers me. Like, once you okay, someone says to you, did you know that the theory of gravity is based on an experiment where they hung heavy balls from a roof and they weighed the earth? Did you know that? Well, that's their story. Let me show you. I'm not making this up. This is their story. Any halfway sensible person would have to go, holy shit, and want to go and look into it. It amazes me that there are these people who think they're awake. They can hear about this stuff, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll just wait for the next YouTube video to tell me more about it. Like, what are you waiting for? This is phenomenal shit. Go and get into it. And, yeah, it is my eternal frustration with YouTube. There are people out there. They know they're being lied to, but they're waiting for people like me to prove it to them. It's like, go and fucking prove it for yourself, man. Jesus, you know?
Well, yeah, yeah. But you want them to come back and say, John, you taught me to wake up and now I've learned and, you know, you inspired me. Because, you know, in a sense, that's the best thing. What you're talking about, that kind of communal thing, when you get back and it's the best research is like on Clues Forum, where it's not just one person. It's a group of people with their good minds, different backgrounds, different points of view, even people who think like Frank sometimes on bizarre issues. And but it doesn't matter, because when you got a crossover, you learn things from each other and, yeah, it becomes a, yeah, I don't know, I've lost my thread now. It's 3:35, it's a pleasure to meet you and chat with you, Jensen. I'll be off soon, very, very soon as well. And, yeah.
Good one.
I appreciate it. It was nice to talk with the pair of you, Frank and Del, and hopefully we can do this again sometime sooner.
By an hour.
Yeah, right. Cheers, guys. Yeah,
see you, guys.
Hello.
I'm Zach Hubbard with freetofindtruth.blogspot.com.
There
and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio.